It is 3:06 on the Central Coast as we say happy Monday, good afternoon, and welcome to a very special edition of Hometown Radio. On this Monday, October 19th, 2015, I'm Dave Congleton, and we are live from Lynn's Restaurant in the East Village of Cambria. That's our special broadcast. We've come all the way up to Cambria to talk about this very special community, that gem of the Central Coast. We're also going to put the spotlight on the annual Scarecrow Festival, which is well underway. A little bit later on, we're also going to visit with some members of the Lynn's family. And did you know the story of the town crier? We'll tell you all about that. It is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. First up, though, always a special pleasure to have, and it's very special today because normally she calls into the show, but she's actually here in person. She's come down the street. Here she is, best-selling author, all-around nice person, the author of 30 books, Katherine Ryan Hyde. Katherine, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. 30 and a half. I'm working hard on the 31st.
How many are you writing a year?
Come over here. I'm actually, at this point, I have a deal with Lake Union Publishing that they will publish two a year if I can write two a year. Now, I'm not promising I can write two a year, but I'm doing it now. I'm doing it so far.
Why two a year? Come on, slow down, Katherine. We do it one a year.
You know, you don't believe in the idea that more is better? Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's just a really good way to cement a readership. You know, I mean, when people get used to liking your books, they can go back and they can read your backlist, but there's going to come a moment when they go, I'm waiting for you to come up with a new thing. And if you release them, you know, frequently enough, then you can really get a readership who's just waiting for your next book, and that's great if you can do it.
Is Cambria a good place to write in, Katherine?
I think it's great. Oh, yeah, I love it. Well, you know, I'm coming from growing up in Buffalo, New York, moving to New York City. I lived in the Bronx and then to L.A. So, I mean, if you really crave that big city excitement, no, I would not recommend Cambria. Right. I do not crave that big city excitement. I love the small-town experience. And yes, it's a great place to write in because it doesn't have a bunch of movie theaters and comedy clubs, and it's really not very distracting. What it has a lot of is nature, which for me is like a really, you know, if I'm going to go out and do something, I'm going to take a walk by the ocean or something, which is a great setting to be doing work in your head.
How did you first come here 30 years ago?
Oh, my mom moved here about 4 years before I did. She had discovered this place. She kind of fell in love with the Moonstone Beach area, which is, you know, down at our feet here. When she and I had been on a trip, I lived in L.A. I had driven up to San Francisco because she had come out from Buffalo for some kind of business trip, and we drove all the way down the coast when we were done from San Francisco to L.A., and she just fell in love with this place. So she moved here, and then I was in a situation where I was living in L.A., I was in between jobs. I had just moved out from living with somebody. I didn't have my own car. And so I did that thing where I'm like, okay, Mom, I'm going to come up and spend the summer with you. Because, you know, it's a tourist town. There are always jobs in the summer. So I came up here in the summer of 1985 to spend the summer with my mom, and I haven't gone home yet.
Well, what kept you here? Why'd you stay?
Boy, I don't know. You compare Cambria and L.A., and I don't know, Cambria gets my vote every time. It's just a beautiful place. It's a wonderful place to live, and I think the only thing that was holding me back from thinking I wanted to live here was the fact that I thought all my friends were in L.A., and I didn't know anybody in Cambria. So I came up over here for the summer and started working in the yogurt shop and the answering service, and boy, in a small town, it is not hard to get to know people.
But is it too small, Katherine?
Not for me. I'm sure there are many people for whom it is too small. You just about can't get too small for me.
Yeah. I'm Ryan Hyde. It is part of our special broadcast from Lynn's up in Cambria. By the way, we're going to be here all the way till 7 o'clock. Come on by and say hi and have a piece of pie. Why not? Make today pie day. Katherine has been here 30 years. Are there special places in town for you, Katherine?
The ocean. The ocean is my special place in town. There are some other really great places in town. There's the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, which we own now, where you can go out and take your dog for a walk along the bluffs. And so there's a really nice trail down along the lower Santa Rosa Creek. where even in the summer you got the trees over you. You're getting the sense that I'm really big on natural places, because I really am.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Cambria is, you know, even within this tiny town, you can go someplace. Like, I can find someplace, I can walk on that Lower Santa Rosa Creek Trail on 4th of July weekend and fairly bump into a soul if I bump into even one person. Boy, you just don't get that kind of solitude everywhere.
Remember the first time we met, you and me and Charlotte?
Yeah, I do. It was that restaurant on the other side of town that redid itself. It's not there. It's where Chris Moore used to always hang out.
That's right. We had come up to do a story for the Tribune about Christopher Moore.
Right.
Because he had a new book out, and you were with him.
And it was like the Pine Tree Inn, called the Pine Tree Cafe or something.
He wrote there every day, I guess.
Yeah. So I was just hanging out there talking to him, and then you guys showed up, and he introduced me and said, you know, this is Catherine, and she just got her first two short stories published. Like, that was a big deal, you know?
But that's why you had come over, because you had just gotten the news.
That's
and
what
you came over to tell Chris the news when we showed up.
That's right, because I had been working for, I don't know, 2 years, and I'd gotten something like 122 rejections trying to get a short story published. And then I got my first short story published. And then like 9 days later, I got my second. And like 5 days after that, I got my third. So I was like bursting with good news.
All right. And then when we lived in Atascadero, and even in San Luis, we would come up and walk dogs with you. What's that ridge? And is that still open space now?
Yeah.
Remember, we started at your house, and we'd come all the way down to Lynn's and turn around.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not open anymore. They fenced that off. That's unfortunate. Most of the open spaces we still get to walk, but that was up on the...
But that's a big memory I have, is that we'd come up and we'd walk dogs through the woods.
And walk all the way into town.
And walk all the way into town, but you can't do that anymore, can you?
No, that would be nice to be able to do.
Any changes you've seen in Cambria over 30 years, Catherine?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, we're very gentrified compared to how we were when I first moved here. Oh, a lot of the really... Well, this was the old Bank of America building.
Right.
And some local clown had clogged up the storm drains or something, thinking that the rain would gather up on the roof and bring it down, and it turned out to be way stronger than anybody thought. A lot of the buildings over here that are these really nice shops now... Where, like, one of them was, like, this tin garage where some old guy was building an airplane. I mean, it was kind of a funky-ass place at the time, I got to tell you. I hope it's okay to say that on the air.
As you say, funky-ass.
Okay, good. Well, I already did, so, you know.
Making sure.
But there were just a lot of dirt lots where you see these really fancy places now.
Yeah.
Where the nice Mexican restaurant is kitty-corner across the street now, there used to be Old Ralph's Gun Shop. I used to have to walk by him in the morning. I used to have to walk by that place in the morning on the way down to the bakery where I worked in the morning, you know, like 4 o'clock in the morning. And you could hear him up there listening to his TV, and you could see his curtain blowing, and you wanted to walk by real slowly because he was kind of a crazy old guy, and you didn't want to let him know you were out there. So I'd walk, like, all the way by and just think I got away with it. And all of a sudden I'd hear, bang, and he's, like, hanging out his window, pointing his finger at me like it's a gun as I go by.
Wow.
I mean, it was a real different place back then.
Did you ever know Captain Nitwit?
I didn't know him well. He made a couple of comments to me when I was walking through town. I don't specifically remember what they were, but he was a gnarly old guy, and he would, like, just call things out to you while he was walking.
But there were those characters in town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We were famous for our characters.
So, well, I remember,
in some ways, we still are.
What was the, on Moonstone Drive, it was like the smorgasbord?
The chuck wagon.
Yes.
I remember the chuck wagon. Yeah.
So that's the Canberra I remember.
Now people that's the old Libri Hotel with underground parking.
The buses would come to town.
Yeah.
And all the children would get off the buses, and they go, the chuck wagon, all you can eat.
All you can eat?
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. People had other names for it that suggested that they didn't think it was, but I kind of like the old chuck wagon.
Our first guest on our special broadcast from Lynn's Restaurant up in beautiful Cambria is best-selling author Catherine Ryan Hyde. Been here 30 years. She's written 30 and a half books. I see a connection between the two. We'll take a break, and we'll come back and chat some more with Catherine. You're listening to News Talk 920 KVEC. It is 3:20 on Newstalk 920 KVC. Welcome back to our special broadcast. I'm Dave Congleton. We're coming to you live from Lynn's Restaurant up in the East Village of Cambria. We're going to be here all the way till 7 o'clock. Come on by and say hi. Have a piece of pie. Tomorrow on the broadcast, we'll be back in the studio. We'll welcome U.S. Congresswoman Lois Capps. On Wednesday, we'll have some live music from Billy Papiano. On Friday, Dr. Gary Forsman is on Hometown Radio. After California headline news at the bottom of the hour, let's talk about Hearst Castle and what's happening at the castle. They certainly have a big impact on the folks who come to the North Coast. Meanwhile, we continue our conversation with Catherine Ryan Hyde, longtime resident of Cambridge. She's been here 30 years, best-selling author, whose website is...
CatherineRyanHyde.com. C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Sorry, you have to do that. There are a lot of ways to spell Catherine.
Put them again for the Scarecrow Festival.
Oh, the Scarecrow Festival is really cool. Everybody likes the Scarecrow Festival. The most challenging thing about the Scarecrow Festival is figuring out who are the scarecrows and who are the tourists. Seriously. I mean, you will see somebody standing there looking at the scarecrows, like leaning in with this big hat or whatever, and you're like, you wait for them to move.
Yeah.
To see if they're a real person or if they're the scarecrow. They're very imaginative. They're everywhere. You can just really have a fun day just walking around, exploring them.
Well, something must be working because I came down Burton Drive into the village, and here it is a Monday afternoon, and I was surprised by how crowded it was.
I wouldn't be surprised if the scarecrows have something to do with it. People like them because they're fun. They're funny, and they just show a lot of imagination.
How do you survive in a town that is based on tourism?
Oh,
I have that problem with the FOMO.
You keep your head down in the summer, and you be real careful running across the highway, which I have to do when I take my dog for a walk, and then you just come out in the winter and pretty much have the whole place to yourself. It's very nice.
The thing about Cambria is that it's there's no other town in the Central Coast like it. I mean, you can go Grover Beach and, oh, Rio Grande, okay, I see that. And Atascadero and Templeton, okay, I see that. But then you have Cambria. It's something different.
It is different. I think it's always been a little bit of an artist colony. I think a lot of writers and artists and musicians have always lived here. I don't know if there's something that's appealing to creative people or if it's just the fact that it's not that cheap a place to be. I mean, you know what I mean. It's a great place for someone who can phone it in, figuratively speaking, and kind of hard for people who have to work in person. But you know, we've always had kind of like interesting little... luminary sort of people living here.
My favorite is, he must have been during your time, Frank Kane, who played Mr. Drucker on Green Acres, lived here for a while.
I did not know that. Was it before I lived here? It must have been.
No, it would have been. I interviewed him, 1990, 1991.
Yeah, I was
and he was up there, and I went to interview him, and I rang his doorbell, and he called to his wife, you know, I'll get the door. But he was Mr. Trucker. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Mr. Trucker.
You're pretty easily impressed, aren't you, Dave?
I feel like you so. Let's talk a bit about what you're into now. I have two books in my hand, both by Catherine Ryan Hyde. One is called Worthy, and the other is called Ask Him Why.
Yeah, Worthy is my most recent release. It came out this past summer. I actually have been, I'm with Lake Union, which is a division of Amazon Publishing, which is a very good thing for me because they're publishing two books a year of mine, and they're really getting them out there where people can find them to read them. So Ask Him Why is my winter book that's going to be out on December 15th. And then I've got another one called Leaving Blythe River that will be out next summer. And then I'm working on the one that will be out next December, assuming that I finish it and all goes well. So between that and the new horse, I'll tell you, it's busy, but I'm managing.
We're going to get to the horse in a second. Are you writing... as opposed to writing every day?
I never write every day, no. I write on the days when it's there and it's working and I know I have something worth writing. And when it's not that day, I do other things like cleaning out the garage and balancing my checkbook and getting the oil changed in my car, because when it's there and it's working, I won't do those things no matter how badly they need it.
So how many days a week might it be there for you, Catherine?
You know, if I'm lucky, it might be there for 10 days in a row, and I might write 10 pages a day for 10 days running, and boom, there's 100 pages I didn't have 10 days ago. And then I may go another 10 days and just not really know what my next scene is. Yeah. Very feast and famine. I don't try to force it. More and more, I just kind of understand it will come back. Don't panic, you know. And I just, you know, when it's there and it's rich and it's detailed enough, I put it down. I wrote some this morning. I wrote some yesterday morning. before I went out and did a ground clinic with my horse. I fit it all in somehow.
She mentioned her horse twice now in a minute.
It's very hard for me to talk about my life without mentioning him.
I know, I've seen your Facebook page.
He's a big part of it. Oh, people like pictures of your horse.
Let's talk about Nathan the horse.
All right, Nathan the horse. Well, what do you want to know about Nathan?
Everything.
Everything. Okay.
Because I know very little about horses.
That should fascinate viewers. Okay, he's 14 years old. I've only had him since February. He's a big bay quarter horse, and by big I mean 16.3 hands. His withers come up to my forehead, and he's a mellow guy. I think he thinks he's a golden retriever. If you kiss him on the nose, he will lick your chin. He's a very dog-like horse. He's just an easygoing guy.
And why did you want a horse again?
I've always loved horses. I had a horse when I was in my 30s, and he was not the right horse for me. He was, like, way too high-strung. And when I decided to be a rider seriously, I couldn't afford him. I didn't have time for him. I was scared of him. He was really a feisty little guy. And so I sent him to another good home. And I've always wanted to do it again, but I wanted to do it differently this time. I wanted to get, like, the big mellow guy who will not kill you, probably. And so that's what... It was kind of a bucket list item for me to do the horse thing again.
And how's it working out for you, Catherine?
I think it's working out beautifully. I've actually been learning training-level dressage, just because I have this wonderful opportunity to work with Barbie Breen Gurley, who is just a world-class dressage teacher. It's just too good an opportunity to let go by. And so I'm riding English, and I'm just learning to do all these amazing things. It's really cementing my relationship with the guy. And it's a very interesting challenge. You know me, I like a challenge.
This is so odd. My neighbor in the pump walked in here at 2:30, and she was a big horsewoman. But she's gone before you had a chance to see her.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
What are the odds? What are the odds of that?
You always like another horse person because basically there's nobody else on the planet.
But she comes all the way. She's my neighbor in the Pomo.
And you run into her. Yeah. You know, non-horse people do not want to sit there and let you talk about your horse as long as you want to talk about your horse. You need another horse person for that, let's face it.
What's happening in public these days, Catherine? Give us some good news for writers.
Things are going great for me. I think it is good news for writers. I think what's going on is good news for writers. I think e-books are still strong. I think the reports that they're not kind of skews the statistics a little bit. I think that's only how they're doing for the big publishers who price them high. I think the very traditional sorts in publishing are complaining that things are not good in publishing.
Right.
And I think the people who are rolling with the changes are doing great.
But are people reading books again, or are we still reading e-books?
What do you mean, books or e-books, Dave? You trying to tell me that e-books are not books?
I'm one of those elitists. Are people reading hardcover books?
I don't know. I would say probably they're reading more paperback than hardcover.
Okay.
Just because I think e-books have allowed us to realize that books can be affordable and hardcovers are darned expensive. So I think people are reading a lot of paperbacks. I don't have a single book that isn't available in paperback as well as e-book. I think it's just a choice of how people want to read. And yeah, I think people are reading, but I think the e-book revolution has helped.
Catherine Ryan Hyde, thank you for being part of our special broadcast.
30 seconds.
Final thoughts, please.
Oh, final thoughts. E-books are books. Don't listen to Dave on that. And,
a couple e-books.
And the way that you manage to write two books a year and have a new horse is to basically say no to everything everybody asks you to do, unless it's Dave Conkleton.
God bless you, Catherine. And offer your piece of pie. I don't want any. Here's California Headline News. Stick around. Welcome back to a special edition of Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Conkleton, especially because we're up in Cambria. We're coming to you from upstairs of Lynn's Restaurant in the beautiful East Village of Cambria. The Scarecrow Festival is underway. Come on by and say hi. We're here till 7 o'clock, but by all means, come on up to Cambria and enjoy the Scarecrow Festival. My next guest, Ty Smith, Chief of Museum Interpretation at Hearst Castle, says, yeah, come on up, but as long as you're up here, you might as well go on up to the castle and check that out, too. Ty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on Hometown Theater. You're also a Danbury resident.
Yeah, I've grew up in the area. I grew up in Paso Robles, and my first state job was at Hearst Castle. I was going to Cal Poly as a history major and working at the castle, and it was great. And then I left and went out into the world. And when my wife and I decided to move back to take the position I'm in now, we said, well, we better go on the coast.
What's so special about Cambria other than the climate?
Well, the climate is key, but, you know, it's a small town, and it's got a lot of small town charm. And having lived in Sacramento for a lot of years in between growing up here, it's special.
Do you have a special spot in town other than the ocean?
Well, not to plug my own business or anything, but my wife and I own and operate a gift shop here in Cambria, so it's right next door in the other brick building.
I'll go ahead and mention it. Go ahead and put it again.
It's called Hide and Tallow, and it's a gift shop that's above the Vault Gallery in the old 1928 bank building here.
And you're listening to the advertising team. Let's also mention the Scarecrow Festival. It's amazing to see how many people are in Cambria on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah, it's brought a lot of visitation into town, I think, and I think it's part of a larger kind of reshaping tourist season here on the Central Coast. It used to be August, and then after August was over, that was it. But people are starting to discover that our summer here in Cambria is actually in September and October, and you're getting a lot more of what we would call at the castle a shoulder season, where we still have a lot of visitation.
So, Ty, what do you do exactly at the castle? I mean, your title is Chief of Museum Interpretation. It sounds impressive. What does it mean?
It's a lot of work. but essentially, I manage the visitor services aspect of Hearst Castle, so the ticket office and the tour program.
Yeah. So how are things at the castle?
Things are great. It's up. More visitors. Tourism has been up a lot over 3 years. So over about a three-and-a-half-year period, visitation was up 20%,
right,
which is we get 750,000 people a year, so 20% increase is pretty major.
Yeah.
We've leveled off over the summer, but visitation is still brisk.
I would imagine there's some kind of partnership between the castle and the little area of San Simeon, of course, Cambria. You guys go hand in hand.
Oh, we're all in it together, so absolutely. It's all about partnerships.
Yeah. So people come up for the Scarecrow Festival, they can keep on going up to the castle as well.
Well, they should.
Yeah, they better. What's the website for Hearst Castle?
HearstCastle.com.
And people can go there, get tickets?
Get tickets, can learn about the history and come up. And I'll give you a scoop.
Sure.
Dave, you want one?
Please.
We're going to expand our tour offering. So right now we give a 40-minute tour, and you can choose different tours that focus on different aspects and different areas of the castle. But starting November 2nd, we're going to an expanded format, so a little bit more in-depth interpretation of the history of the place. So,
come on up with it. This is news. Call King Harris. Let's talk about that, because for years, as you know, you get the 75 minutes. You take tour one, two, three, or four, and you could set your clock to it. 75 minutes, you were back on that bus. And then how long ago you changed? A couple years ago?
4.5 years ago.
4.5 years ago. It's you go up for like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, but then you could stay as long as you wanted outside.
Correct.
So are you close on that?
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay.
We went to a briefer tour offering and then allowed folks to roam around outside to their heart's content.
Right? And what kind of response did you get from that time?
I think it was great. I think people really appreciated being able to walk around outside and explore it at their own pace.
Yeah.
And linger in areas that really spoke to them. So I think that aspect of it was really great.
Like the outdoor pool.
Any of the vistas along the Esplanade. So I think people really enjoy that. They love it. They always get comments about how they're happy to be able to have that kind of immersive experience.
Right.
But the downshot was they wanted a little bit more in terms of what they got inside and the time that they were able to spend inside. So we try to listen to the public, and we're responding by increasing the tour length to an hour.
So how is that going to work? Is it still going to be tour 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Roughly, although we're going to try to pass it more off.
Change, you know, redesign that.
The basic structure is going to stay the same, but I think one of the things that we've talked about over the last couple of years is having more, you know, and varied offerings. So One of the things, for example, that we did a couple years ago was institute a tour we called Designing the Dream, which opened up the new wing of Hearst Castle, but really in terms of its content, talked about how the place evolved over a 30-year period. We did a Hollywood and Hearst-themed tour that was a limited-time offering.
Sure.
We're planning to do an art-focused tour that's a limited offering. So, yeah, the basic structure will stay the same. We'll try to innovate a little bit with new tour offerings and longer tour offerings as we go along.
You have a new curator at the castle, or director, head person.
A new director.
Thank you.
Yes.
Talk about her and the impact she's made.
Well, Mary Lovecoff, I think, brings a wealth of experience to the castle. She has a pretty broad and varied work background. Most recently, she worked at the National Gallery, and so she's bringing a lot of real-world experience to Hearst Castle in terms of art and art history and curatorial practices, and it's all good.
Because isn't that the bottom line, Ty? This is a museum. It's many things, but it is a museum.
Yeah, it struggles a bit in terms of definition, because is it a state park? The answer is yes. Is it a house museum? The answer is yes. Is it an art museum? The answer is yes. I like to say it's a museum like no other.
Yeah. I guess I would say it's a museum inside a state park.
Sure.
Do I win anything for that? Do I get to apply for that? I don't know. But it's really special. What does the research say about where your visitors are coming from?
Well, all over the place. And actually, we've put some effort into that more recently in terms of trying to understand our demographic. I think it was a grand experiment when the place opened in 1958 for tours. I read the letters between the officials at that time, and they would write letters back and forth to each other. You know, Governor Goody Knight and Aubrey Neesham, who was the state historian then, and they would say things like, what if we open it and nobody comes? And then a week would go by, and there'd be another letter, and it would say, well, what if two people come?
Yeah.
And so there was a thought of what this place was going to be. But years have proven that it is a pretty good draw. And so we've been happy to open the doors and let people come in. But lately we've given a lot of thought to who's coming, why they're coming, and to help inform our programming. So still see a lot of people from mainland China who are coming on our group tours. This time of year we get a lot of folks from Europe. In the summer, of course, we get a lot of visitation from local, defined sort of broadly, California region.
Well, was Hearst Castle a success the minute it opened?
Yes, I think so. All of their dreams, I think, were realized when they opened the door. There was a lot of interest in it, sustained interest. So since the doors opened in 1958, 40 million people have come to visit.
40 million?
40 million.
Wow. Ty Smith on this broadcast from Hearst Castle as part of our special broadcast from Lynn's Restaurant in the East Village of Cambria. We're up here to put the focus on the Scarecrow Festival. And, of course, our good friends at Lynn's and all the great people in Cambria on the North Coast. So big conversation, we continue. This is News Talk 920 KVEC. Welcome back. I'm Dave Congleton, and I am enjoying myself because I am up in Cambria on this beautiful Monday afternoon, and I'm sitting upstairs at Lynn's Restaurant in Cambria's East Village. And the place is packed, and people are having a great time, so come on by and say hi. We are here till 7 o'clock as part of our special broadcast. AP Radio News at the top of the hour, and then our friends from the Scarecrow Festival will be here during the 4 o'clock hour. Back in studio tomorrow, Congressman Moe's Capps will talk about what's happening, or rather not happening, in the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, as part of our special broadcast from Cambria, we're talking this segment about Hearst Castle and all the good, exciting things happening there. Ty Smith joins us. He is the Chief of Museum Interpretation at the castle. And folks, for folks just tuning in, Ty, let's remind them of the news you shared during the last segment, what's happening starting in November.
So starting November 2nd, we're going to expand our tour offerings a bit. We're going to go from a 40-minute guided tour format to a 60-minute guided tour format. You still get to walk around outside for as long as we're open.
And what's the tour cost these days?
$25 for most of the tours. We have a couple of special offerings that, like our evening tours, for example, that are a bit more, but $25 for the standard tour offerings.
Everything on the website, which is
hearstcastle.com.
That's as well. Now, it's October, it's going to be November, December. Highlight for anybody who loves Hearst Castle coming during the holidays.
Well, the holidays. Everybody loves to see the castle decorated in holiday splendor. We do it every year right now in the basement of Hearst Castle, laying out yards of garland and getting ready. Most everything goes up by Thanksgiving, and so the place will be decorated by Thanksgiving, but this year we're going to do something a little bit different. We will still offer evening tours, but starting December 19th through January 2nd, except for the holiday days, we're going to have a special holiday twilight tour that focuses on Christmas at the ranch, Christmas at Hearst Castle in its historic period. So it'll be decorated for the holidays, but we'll tell stories that really focus on how people celebrated the holidays at Hearst Castle.
And how did they celebrate the holidays? Well, did they make a big deal out of it?
Yeah, they really did make a big deal of it. And you see the historic photos of 18-foot-tall trees just draped in garland and, you know, all sorts of decorations. And so in terms of the way it looked, they made a big deal. But the bigger deal was sort of the community that sprung up around there. And there were always gifts under the Christmas tree, and a lot of those gifts were certainly for Hearst's high-profile guests, but they were also for the children of the people that work for him. And so there are a lot of heartwarming stories that deal with holidays at the ranch.
So the Twilight Tour will start on December 19th?
December 19th. It'll be an evening tour offering that focuses on the decorated areas of the castle and those stories.
And then what about the traditional holiday tour?
Well, the traditional evening tour will still continue. You usually have those on Fridays and Saturdays and during the week, during the second week of December, and those will continue. But if you just go to the website, it'll detail evening tours and then also the offerings for our holiday twilight tour.
Are those tickets available for sale now?
Those tickets are available for sale now.
So if people are even thinking about going, I'd be getting online today because those tours always sell out.
Yeah, they have rolling availability. But usually the December evening tours sell out well in advance by the end of October, and I imagine that the holiday twilight tour will be the same.
Talk a little, Ty, about the challenge of putting together the holiday decorations there. That's going to be like a military operation.
Well, it really is, because people are always surprised at how few curatorial staff that Hearst Castle has. They really work hard. It's just a handful of folks who every day are working towards the conservation and care of 23,000 objects of art, you know, for example. And then add to that existing task of decorating for the holidays. And so there are people who work very long hours laying out all of the decorations and putting them up. And it's fun to kind of see them go up over the weeks until it reaches kind of full holiday splendor.
And are these vintage decorations, or are these decorations from when Hearst would have been at the castle?
Well, it's a little mix of the old and new, and okay. So certainly we try to evoke that historic sensibility, although we have some restrictions, and, you know, there wasn't an underwriter's laboratory back in the 1930s, so yeah. We probably have a few more mini bulbs than he would have had, but I think it does a good job at capturing the spirit of what it was.
We should talk a little bit about the nonprofit group that the castle works with, the Friends of Hearst Castle,
yeah.
The great work they do.
No, it really does. We wouldn't have the California State Park system that we have without the work of our cooperating associations, those nonprofit organizations that are set up to help us accomplish things that we can't do on our own. And Friends of Hearst Castle does such a wonderful job at raising funds for the preservation of objects of art, for programming to bring kids from schools up to the castle for special art programs, so really help us extend our reach.
Who can be a friend?
Anybody can be a friend.
Anybody?
You can be a friend. Anybody can be a friend. There are all sorts of ways to be involved. You can sign up as a basic member for a relatively low cost, I don't know, $25 or $30. You can go to their website and check it out. But then there are different levels, corporate sponsorships, sponsorships of friends, and they entitle you to different levels of access to Hearst Castle.
I know you get the question all the time, but people say, oh, wait a minute, why do you need an organization like that? You get money from the state, you get money from your ticket sale.
Well, we get some money from the state, and we bring in money, but we're part of a state park system, and overall in states we have a pretty large deferred maintenance bill. So, you know, the state government can't do everything for us, and so we really depend on fundraising and those sorts of activities to help us go beyond the minimum.
We're chatting with Ty Smith from Hearst Castle. What's your favorite spot at the castle?
Oh, the library. I'm a historian. So
okay. For
me, I walk up there and I see 4,500 books and I kind of just melt. But, you know, the other thing is above the bookcases up there are about 155 Greek and Etruscan pots. So There's book, ancient books and new books, and I love it up there.
Are there secret passageways in the castle? I mean, if you take a book out and all of a sudden it opens?
No, you know, one of the things that I don't mean to disappoint. I disappoint people all the time because one of the two things you want out of a place like Hearst Castle, you want ghost stories and you want secret passages, and we don't really have either. Or the closest thing we have to it are some doors that blend in with choir stalls down in the assembly room. But yeah, no secret passages.
No ghosts.
That I know of. Maybe I'm just not intuitive enough to sense it, but yeah, I haven't discovered any ghosts or any secret passages, but I'll keep looking.
And I know the County Library, the Historical Society, had the Phoebe Hearst exhibit. Any plans?
The matriarch, yeah.
Yeah, any plans to bring that?
Yeah, I think what we're going to do in the coming months is take the core of that exhibit that was at the County Historical Society and put it in our exhibition space down at the Visitor Center. Free, anybody can come in and take a look and explore the contributions of Phoebe Hearst, for whom the monument was dedicated.
Right. And people would also come up and see the movie about Hearst?
Well, sure. The movie Building the Dream is part of the ticket price, but if you just wanted to come and watch the movie, they'll sell you a single ticket just for the movie.
Right. And what do you eat there? Sorry, what do you eat there as in the food court?
Well, I work on the hilltop, so I often brown bag it because it's 5 miles from the visitor center to the hilltop. But if I'm down there, I'll get a burger.
All right. Ty Smith, thanks so much for coming in again. The website for Hearst Castle is?
HearstCastle.com.
Final thoughts, sir?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to talk about Hearst Castle. Come visit us.
You seem to really enjoy your job.
I do.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Off we go to AP Radio News, find out what's happening around the world. Andrew's going to tell me when the music is playing. And we'll be back with all of our live coverage from Lynn's up in Cambria. We're live with local. We're hometown radio. Stick around. It is 4:06 on the Central Coast. Happy Monday. Welcome back to a special edition of Hometown Radio. On this Monday, October 19th, 2015, I'm Dave Congle. It continues to be special because we are broadcasting live from Lynn's Restaurant up in the beautiful East Village of Cambria. We're going to be here all the way till 7 o'clock. Come on by and say hi. It's an absolutely beautiful day. Streets are packed. People are out and about. That says one thing to me. The scarecrows are back. And we're going to talk about scarecrows. We have to talk with our good friend. She's here right now. Let's say good afternoon. Welcome to Taylor Hilton. Taylor, how are you?
Oh, Dave, I'm so excited to have you here. It's a real honor to have you come all the way to Cambria for your show.
Well, we came here to help you with the scarecrows. We're so impressed by this event. Each year you blow us away with a great job that you and all the volunteers do.
Thank you. And it is a team effort. And every year it's a little bit different and a little bit more exciting for us. There's a lot of new scarecrows this year, some new things that we've tried. And if you haven't been here for a while, come on back.
What's the website?
CambriaScarecrows.com.
I promise we're going to talk about the scarecrows, but you've been here 20 years?
20 years, yes.
How'd you come to Cambria?
Well, we lived in Orange County, my husband and I, and we were in a little neighborhood that got together and had a little parties, and one of the people at the party said, I've got a friend I went to college with who lives up in Cambria, and he just told me the town of Harmony is for sale. We should all get together, we here at the party tonight, and go up there and buy that town. So that's what brought us here.
But you didn't get to buy the town.
We didn't buy the town, but we fell in love with Cambria.
And what did you fall in love with?
We fell in love with the aesthetic beauty of the mountains and the ocean and the clean air, the smallness of it, and that was 1980, and we moved here in 95. So for the next 15 years, we kept coming back. This was our escape getaway.
And now that you're here, well, obviously you must like it since you've stayed.
It's like being on vacation every day, Dave. It's just exceeded our expectations by miles. But what we found out, the best part of Cambria isn't really the weather or the mountains, it's the people. It is such a sense of community, and I don't think you can find that too many places.
And the pie ain't bad either.
Well, you've got to come.
I know you know Lee.
I know Lee. This is the go-to place for pie anywhere in the county. Lynn's makes the best pie.
What was that they served you? They served you a piece of pie.
It's the new pumpkin pie this year, and you just got to have it every year.
All right. we're going to hit before we leave. Andrew and I are looking at each other. We're not leaving here without some pumpkin
pie. But you can't have my pie, Dave.
No, well, you'll have yours. So things are good. And so far, the Scarecrow Festival is off to a rousing start. This happens all month long, right?
It's the entire month, yes. And this is our seventh festival. And it is on display the entire month. We end on the 31st of October. However, they'll still be up through that weekend. Right. We won't take them down until the following week. So if you want to come up the last week for Halloween, they'll still be up.
Well, you're going to introduce us to some pretty special people throughout the hour. Give us a preview. Who are we going to meet?
Well, I'm very honored to have with us this afternoon two Scarecrow creators from Coast Union High School. And we are blessed to have them because they, the students, create new scarecrows for the festival every year. This year we got 30 new scarecrows out of their class, and they're just top-notch, Dave. You've got to drive down Main Street and look at some of them. The Minions are out there, for instance. We have an award winner here, Ellie. She created the scarecrows in San Simeon that are William Randolph Hearst and Julia Morgan. It was just pretty impressive. So the quality of the scarecrows has definitely gone up from our first couple of festivals,
right.
And we've got more motion scarecrows this year. We've got the bicycles back, and they're all new. The nuns are back. They're new and updated. And
so we're going to meet some of the artists.
We are, and we're going to talk to them a little bit later, some of the award-winning artists and the fun that they had in their creating. So we're going to have to get you out here to make a scarecrow, Dave, or make one that looks like you.
Well, how do you make a scarecrow? Well, there's a temptation. I know several people like to help on that one. What makes a good scarecrow?
Oh, it's just the imagination. Anybody can make a scarecrow, Dave. That's what's fun about it. It opens up your creative talents, but you don't have to be what you call an artist. So you can start with an image or an imagination, as I mentioned, the Minions. Or you can just create something fanciful. This year, our theme is a magical place, so we have a lot of magical sorts of scarecrows in town and a lot of storybook creations.
I know. I don't think you're on Facebook.
Me personally, I'm not.
But you're all over Facebook, Scarecrow Festival. My friends are posting. What are we doing today? We're up in Cambria. We're seeing the scarecrows. People coming from all over the county to see the scarecrows.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, Dave. Thank you. And I hope the ones that are coming, remember to go to the nursery because it is a little bit off the beaten path. You've been there, Dave.
Right.
And, you know, this year they have about 30 new scarecrows up there.
And this is the one in Kitty Corner from the Cambria Pines Lodge?
It is.
All right.
Yeah.
And so those are all new scarecrows there?
New scarecrows this year. Right. And he had had some more of a horror theme in the past. He tried to do something a little bit more fanciful and fun. And they have Alice in Wonderland and the whole tea party and Syracuse.
Can I mention the four-letter word that you probably don't want to hear?
Yes.
Rain. John Lindsay says, big winter storm coming, end of the month.
Uh-oh. That is bad because we take the scarecrows down after the end of the month. They're going to be soaking wet, and we can't store them that way.
Right.
So,
but I was also trying to suggest that perhaps if people are even thinking about coming up to see the scarecrows, and if they're not going to come during the week, they should come this weekend.
Excellent.
Because it looks like some rain toward the end of the month.
And what happens when it rains, Dave, is we have to cover them with plastic bags.
Really?
So it makes it a little hard.
Does that happen?
Oh, it happens all the time. So if your listeners are planning to come, do come early. It's not as much fun to see them when they're covered in plastic bags.
Right. And they're up, it's 24/7, right, throughout the month of October?
Yes, that's right. I'll also mention that there's no entry fee. Everything, of course, is free.
You should charge people to come to the campground for that month.
I know.
It's like a little tax.
That would be great, yeah. And we'll give you a commission.
Sure.
The thing about it, Dave, it appeals to everyone, all age groups, children on up. There's something for everybody. It's pretty magical.
But how do you take all this in? Is there a strategy to seeing the scarecrows? Is there a certain place you're supposed to start, Taylor? How do you do this?
There is no special place to start. I think when you get to Cambria, you'll see the banners out on the highway. You can turn in there. And because we're a main street, a lot of them are visible as you drive slowly by. And you can park your car when you get into town, get out and walk. You know, we have two villages here. And there's also a number of scarecrows down on Moonstone Beach Drive and the city of San Simeon. You don't want to miss those. There's some really special ones. Oh, and this year, we've got a few in Harmony.
they're spreading down. They could take over Cayucas next. Oh, Lord, here come the scarecrows. Look, I think I saw that movie. Let's break away. We're going to come back and talk more with Taylor about the annual Scarecrow Festival happening up here in Cambria. If you haven't been to this festival, you really owe it to yourselves to make the drive to come up. It's fun, it's free, it's family-oriented. That's all you need to know. And when we come back, we're going to meet some of the artists involved and continue our live coverage from Lynn's Restaurant in the East Village of Cambria. I'm Dave Congleton. This is News Talk 920 KVEC. We're live, we're local, we're hometown radio. It is 419 on News Talk 920 KVEC. Welcome back. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. And we're hometown up in Cambria this afternoon. We are broadcasting live from Lynn's Restaurant upstairs in the beautiful East Village of Cambria. The day could not be better. All we need is you. Hop in your car, come on up, see the scarecrows. That's why we're here. We're here all the way to 7 o'clock, straight ahead on this broadcast. We're at Lynn's, so during the 5 o'clock hour, let's visit with members of Lynn's family. We also have a real official town crier. In fact, there's a couple of town criers on their way over. George Marshall is also going to be here from the local nursery, among other things. He's put the spotlight on Cambria. We're back with our good friend Taylor Hilden, who is one of the many organizers, the driving force, I'm going to say, behind the annual Scarecrow Festival, continues to do very well.
Thank you, Dave. We're very excited.
And the website is?
Cambria Scarecrows with an S.
Go on the website, see photos.
Photos from this, not this year, but from years back. I don't think that this year's is uploaded yet, but it might be. I haven't checked lately.
All right, introduce Alex and Ellie for us, please.
It is my pleasure and honor to have Alex DeAlba. He is a graduated Coast Union High School student currently attending college, and Ellie Magnuson, who is currently a student at Coast Union High School. And both of these students are just outstanding in so many ways, but they're also star Scarecrow creators.
Hey, nice to meet both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I meet you as well.
All right, Alex, so talk a little bit about your scarecrow.
So this year we got to do a beautiful genie from the Disney cartoon. It's a big genie, and it's outside of the Real Estate Company of Cambria. You really need to stop by and check it out because it was a hard process to make, but it was worth it at the end.
And you've been doing this for 4 years in a row now?
Yes, so 4 years. I think I lost track.
Why? Why do you do this?
I started in my art class. My teacher, Suzette Morrow, she brought it up to my attention to do it in 3D design, and then after that I just started liking the idea and just have kept going since then.
So it sounds like you're drawn to art.
Yes.
Yeah, in the microphone.
Yes, I've been an AP art student, but that got me to go to art, and I like how you can express the way you feel by creating beautiful creatures.
So yours is the genie?
Yes.
Was it difficult to make?
Yes, it was a big box, and we had the whole office involved, as well as Janie. Janie Kuntz helped us out a lot, and she's really good with art. So it was a process, took us a few nights to make, probably close to 30 hours is my guess. So it was a lot of fun.
Holy cow. And you're a native? You came here? You've been here all your life?
Yes, I've been born and raised here in Cambria, and I absolutely love it. I'm going to stay here forever.
Why do you love Cambria so much?
I fell in love with the whole place as a whole. Like, let's say, I like going out and hiking, exploring all the nature trails, the ocean, just waking up and knowing that I don't have to worry about violence or anything going on. And most of all, I fell in love with the community and all the great people.
Good people in Cambria?
Great people, not just good, Dave.
Oh, wow. This guy should be your PR guy. Holy cow. I don't know what to say. Allie, what's your story?
This is my first year creating a scarecrow. I created William Randolph Hearst from the Morgan Inn. I'm also a 3D art student, and I thoroughly enjoyed getting to be with the community and learning a whole lot about William Randolph Hearst and the history of not only the Hearst Castle, but him, the man himself, and it was a great opportunity.
Now, I'm going to be there tomorrow morning because I want to see this. I haven't seen it yet, Ellie. What is your scarecrow doing?
My scarecrow is next to Julia Morgan,
right,
and they are actually pointing at the Hearst Castle.
Right. So does it look like them, or does it look like scarecrows?
We tried our best to make it look just like them.
All right. So what is a scarecrow? Because isn't a scarecrow supposed to be scary? Aren't they supposed to scare people?
The typical scarecrow that comes to mind are this stick and straw scarecrow out in the field with a crow on the shoulder sort of thing. But here in Cambria, we decided to take it to a different level. And because of the high school art department, it's really added to the festival itself. These, I would say, are more, what do you say, Ellie? What kind of a creation?
I would say lifelike. They took a lot of plaster and paint and detail and hard work.
Right. And we have a lot of recognizable characters. A lot this year we have Peter Pan and Tinkerbell and those kinds of recognizable
characters. Is that legal? Did you have to get permission for that?
We're not calling them those words.
That's coming from a published author. You know how to...
Don't worry, we have the El Dorado legal department standing by. We're safe. There's no problem there whatsoever. How long did you spend on William Randolph Hearst and Julia Morgan?
We got 88 minutes in our class, so we had, I'm going to say, 2 weeks to work on it.
So. And did you pick that topic yourself?
Yes.
Or did the teacher?
Yeah, the Morgan Hotel gave us full creative authority, so we decided to make it resemble.
And why did you want to do Hearst and Morgan?
You know, it just has so much history with the town and the community that we decided that it fit perfectly.
Yeah.
So is the Morgan Hotel actually named after Julie Morgan?
Yes, yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, Harry Morgan.
There you go.
That's a joke for anybody over the age of 60. Alex, so what made you do the genie?
Well, it started off, we were sitting on our Wine Thursday meetings, as we do every Thursday. And we were
in Thursday.
Wine Thursday. It used to be Wine Friday,
doesn't it?
Yeah, so we were sitting there discussing, and we heard the theme was a magical place. So we decided, we started thinking about, how about a genie coming out of a wine bottle was our first original idea.
Yeah.
And then we're like, all right, let's keep it PG. So we decided to go with the whole Disney genie.
Why don't you do that, right, PG? PG is his family.
And what he didn't mention is it's kind of reclining, isn't it?
Yes, it's leaning back a little bit. It's kind of cool. You really need to stop by and check it out.
Oh, you'll love it. It's huge.
Wow. And talk a little bit about your impression when you saw the genie.
I thought it was professionally made. I thought for sure they had hired a professional sculptor. Seriously.
Yeah. And the same thing with William Randolph Hearst.
Oh,
what were your impressions?
The likeness is very impressive. And they won first place Best of Show.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is there an art teacher we need to give credit to?
Most definitely, Suzette Morrow.
Of course, I agree with her completely. She's the one that got me involved in this.
Let's talk about her. What makes her so special?
Before, our art teachers in the high school, they weren't so involved in the community and stuff. They did give us fun events, but not like her.
Right.
As soon as she got here, she got really involved in the community and just started bringing a lot more to art and getting us involved with the community. We also got to draw a whole bunch of murals around the campus, which was kind of hard to get them approved, but they're totally worth it.
Yeah, but I've seen that movie. The school board will fire her. Something happened. Have you seen that movie? Teacher comes to town. The student's excited. I've seen this movie a dozen times.
Oh.
And then the teacher gets fired, and the students have to rise up, and you learn your lesson of life. Never mind. Talk about your teacher.
Suzette Morrow. She's great. She's so encouraging, and I genuinely believe that she loves us and that she wants us to better ourselves and better the community, and she's put herself fully into what she's doing, so we really enjoy what she's doing.
Hmm. I'd be curious, I mean, what would they be doing if they didn't have this project?
Well, I think they would have a kickback class, maybe playing on their iPhone or their iPad. I'm not really sure. It would be a little bit different.
Well, it's a great opportunity because you're doing public art.
Yes.
That's what this is. It's public.
And I can tell you that this, without exaggeration, the student participation is the best thing about the festival for us. It's
Why do you
just,
say that?
Well, because they just raise us up. They give us such joy. And that they're able to accomplish what they do in a month's period of time is phenomenal. So we're extremely proud of them.
Ellie, talk about why people should come up to a Scarecrow Festival. What's the draw?
I think the draw is... in the town itself, we're such a tight-knit family, I believe, and we really come together to create these scarecrows, and they're so whimsical and fun and exciting. So I definitely take a look. It's worth it.
Alex, how do we get people up here?
I think it's definitely a fun thing to do with your family. If you have some spare time, I definitely recommend, and if you don't have some spare time, make some spare time to head down here and check the scarecrows out.
So what are you going to do long-term, Alex? What's your goal?
Long term, I'm a real estate agent here in town. I plan to stay here forever.
All right.
Keep making scarecrows every year.
I'm getting that impression. He's going to stay here forever. He really likes his sound. But you're always going to do art, aren't you?
Yes. Looking forward to our next idea already. So we can't wait until the Scarecrow Committee tells us our theme so we can start planning on our next Wine Thursday.
This guy, it must be the Wine Thursday. Allie, what's your plan?
I'm a senior at Coastian High School, so I wish I could tell you my plan. But we'll see. Decision.
But do you see pursuing art?
Most definitely.
Or is this just a hobby for you?
Most definitely pursue art. I enjoy it.
That
was one of our star athletes at Coast Union.
What do you do?
I play football.
Really? Well, mm-hmm. There could be a scholarship in that.
They're looking at her already.
All right. I think we're going to continue this after the news break, but let's remind folks what's happening here. We've got the big Scarecrow Festival underway in Cambria.
It's going on every day. It's all ready for you to come and enjoy, walk the streets, plan to spend the day, plan to have some pie at Lynn's, plan to spend the night on Moonstone Beach Drive or one of our local Main Street hotels, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
All right. We're off to California Headline News. Is that the signal, Andrew?
Yeah, about another 50 seconds.
Okay. I'm Dave Congleton. This is News Talk 920 KVC, California Headline News. Craig Hill has traffic. Scott Taylor has weather. And we'll come back with more of our live coverage from the Cambria Scarecrow Festival right here on Hometown Radio. Congleton Show, always your Hometown Radio talk show. It's 4:37 on News Talk 920 KVEC. And we are up in Cambria enjoying a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful afternoon. The weather is just perfect. And we are in Lynn's Restaurant there in the East Village. Come on by and say hi. We're here all the way till 7 o'clock. Just having a grand time. John Lynn and different members of his family are going to drop by during the 5 o'clock hour. We have some other guests coming by during the 6 o'clock hour. Meanwhile, the main reason we came to Cambria this afternoon is to support and encourage you to support the Scarecrow Festival. This is just a really, really great idea. They've been doing it now for 7 years. Taylor Hilden remains, in my opinion, the driving force behind all this. She's sitting here with me while she's not enjoying her Lynn's pie. What are you eating there?
Pumpkin. It's yummy.
All right. So, if for another reason, come on up and have a piece of pie at Lynn's. It's as simple as that. All right, Taylor, who are we going to meet next?
It is my pleasure, Dave, to introduce you to Bill and Mona Shepherd. They are outstanding scarecrow creators here in Cambria. In fact, they're award winners 2 years in a row.
Uh-oh. Nice to meet you both. What's your secret? How do you become an award-winning scarecrow maker, Mona?
Just fun. Lots of fun. Enjoy working every day, creating something I have to create and do some sort of artistic outlet, and this is perfect for me.
What do you do when you're not making scarecrows?
Paper crafts.
All right. So you're an artist by training?
I am not.
Okay.
I am not.
But you're an artist by design.
I am a hobbyist.
Okay.
My wife is very humble there. She's a surgical nurse, and so she knows anatomy, and when she looks at these scarecrows, she will be sure they're anatomically correct. That's really great.
Okay. Is that necessary?
Even if you're out of proportion, they need to be anatomically correctly out of proportion.
Is that necessary? I guess. And George, what do you do?
Well, my name is Bill.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. It's right here on my cue card. Bill. Hi, Bill. What do you do? I'm thinking of the 6 o'clock guest. I need some pie. Damn, I need some pie.
Lullaberry pie from Lynn's.
Sugar.
Bill, what do you do?
When I'm not making scarecrows, I'm making vitamins.
Okay.
That's my passion is vitamins. I've been making vitamins for the last 30 years. But for scarecrows, I make the skeletons and I make them move, and that's been my pleasure.
All right, but here's the deal. You make vitamins and you're a nurse. How do you decide, I'm going to go make scarecrows? I don't get that.
Well, but
this is only our second year here, and I was invited by a friend to help her last year with her scarecrow, also her first time doing a scarecrow. I have no idea where we were.
And you said, we'll do it.
Sure.
Were you sober?
I had no idea we were getting into, but we had a lot of fun last year. The scarecrow committee, they had a workshop where we learned all about it and how to get started, and then from there we just went for it. So we had a lot of fun.
And this is one of the ones that Charlotte Knight judged.
Yes, yes.
What they do last year?
Last year they did the mariachi play, that whole ensemble that had the deer with it and the folklore code dancer. It was just colorful and beautiful, and Bill created the motion for it, which kind of brought us up to a whole new level, Bill.
And so Mona is getting involved, and she comes and says to you, Bill, hey, let's do it. And you're like, oh, sure, why not?
She said she needs a skeleton to hold it up. So a skeleton to hold it up means exactly that. I've got to create it. They start making them out of wood, and that's there. I change it to putty, and then I change it to moving pipe, and everybody seemed to like it.
Had either one of you done anything like this before?
Never.
papier-mâché type thing in art classes in high school, sculpting.
So pick up your newcomers. You've only been here 2 years. Where'd you come from, and why'd you come to Cambria?
We are not here quite 2 years. We come from Southern California, from Santa Clarita, and just came out here because we love paradise. Basically, we love every day being here.
I can't believe this story. They moved here from Southern California because they wanted paradise. Really, I've never heard that before. Why Cambria? How'd you choose Cambria?
Well, we were moving up here for cooler weather. Right. Southern California, we were in the 90-degree pretty much year-round, and we wanted much cooler weather. My husband cannot be in hot temperatures due to health issues.
Don't take a vitamin. Take a vitamin.
So this is just perfect. Perfect area. This whole San Luis Obispo County is perfect. The weather's great. The wine is great. Mince pies are fabulous.
Yeah, Don't forget the pie.
Lullaberry pie.
Is that your favorite, man?
That is my favorite.
All right, if you're a good boy, we might get him a piece of lullaberry pie.
Good boy.
And so do you agree? Hey, Cambria, that's the place to go.
First time I remember being here, the next day we were looking for a house.
Really? What was it for you, Bill?
The weather, the people, I really enjoyed the look and the feel of the town. As you walk through the town and talk to people and ask questions, they were friendly, they were smiling. It doesn't sound like Southern California.
Yeah, no. And so what's the importance to you of a town that has a Scarecrow Festival? Why is this such a big deal?
Well, for me, it's a creative outlet. I have a lot of fun with this. Like my husband says, I doing the almost life-size scarecrows. It's because of my previous training, I'm able to create a lifelike person with anatomically correct proportions.
You're really into that.
I actually had my husband tear it down once or twice because, the arms are too long for the leg, the legs are too short, and, just have to match perfectly.
Yeah. Bill, why is the Scarecrow Festival a big deal?
I think it helps to bring the town together, and the businesses together, and the people together, and the tourists. During the time when we happened to spend our first fall here during the festival last year, and you could watch the people as they were looking and talking, and just got my excitement more and more for what it can do to bring not just the town together, but the tourists and their viewpoint of our town.
Well, that's how you met Taylor. You met them through the festival.
Yes, I'm happy to say I did, and now they're part of the family.
And so that must be a common experience for you. You're meeting all the different artists, and you probably didn't know a lot of them before this festival.
Right, and a good portion of them we do meet in the workshops, as Mona mentioned, and that's brought a lot of us together, that we've remained together to continue to make scarecrows year after year.
Do you have to be a Cambria resident to participate?
Yes, good question. We do have that requirement, and the reason for that is people that are out of the area don't have the ability to maintain their scarecrow, and that's part of the very few requirements that we have, is that you are here. Plus, we're kind of grassroots day. We're real proud of the fact that we all come together and make them together. We're proud of what we've got. And the reason we do it is to bring joy to the world. As Bill said, the tourists that come to town.
Joy to the world.
Just to see the smiles on their faces.
More pie for her. Peace on earth? How about
peace
that?
Peace on earth.
Yeah. A piece of pie. Taylor Hilton is here. We should charge Lynn more each time we mention the pie. Can we work that deal in? Taylor Hilton is here. We're talking about the Scarecrow Festival. And we have Bill and Mona Shepherd. So remind me again, what is that you did this year?
Well, this year, go ahead and tell them.
We got involved in quite a few projects in town. I started out just coming to the workshop to help rehabilitate last year's scarecrows. And we did Beastly from the Beauty and the Beast theme, which is, I'm not even sure what the actual name of it is. And we need a candelabra, so that's two from there. A Cambria royal couple, and we also collaborated with an artist in town to do a moving crab, which you see outside of a realtor office here in town.
How do you decide where the scarecrows are located, Timothy?
That's a very good question. We have a lot of businesses that request scarecrows from us. Many of them rent them from the high school students, the ones that the high school students made this year. We have rented to the businesses. So it's a service from the school to the business, so the business doesn't have to put in hours to create it. They
Right, but I'm a business that says, I want a scarecrow, but how do you decide which one they get?
I don't, fortunately. Okay. The high school student has their is working with the teacher puts those two together, the student calls the business, and they decide what the business would like to display, and then the student creates it.
Wow.
So what Mona has suggested is this particular business, she happened to know the people that work there, and they wanted the talents of Bill and Mona. So it becomes a coveted thing when you've got a talent like...
So you were asked for it. They requested your scarecrow.
It happens at times, yes.
All right. So, Bill, tell me a bit about the strategy. How did you design, how did you put together this year's entry? This year's award-winning entry.
The Beauty and the Beast had to be large, so we built it initially. And
anatomically correct.
And anatomically, probably incorrect for a beast, you know. But to build a 7-foot-tall beast, and it's 7-foot-tall at the head, not at his arms, is a huge project, and especially when you're building it in your home. And as the neighbors would see it as we're building it, it became more and more fun because it became larger and larger when it became larger in life.
Well, I guess that's a key question, where they actually built the scarecrow. So you built it at your house.
We did, yes. And we do not have the room for it, so it was tough.
our foyer was our main source of building these, and in the porch to the outside of our foyer. And so the neighbors could see it as we're working outside to build it and then bring them inside as they become more sensitive.
It is pretty amazing, Taylor, to see how this event has transformed the community. Just hearing like this little tidbit of the story here.
It is totally amazing, Dave. And what I'm really proud of is that Bill and Mona both participated in creating the entire beast display for the Pine Dorado Parade float. We, the Scarecrow Festival family, put a float in the parade every year, and our float won first place.
Yay!
In a non-commercial float. So we were very, very pleased.
Wow.
Thanks to these two. Well, it was a collaborative effort, but...
There are many more involved, but they...
Yes.
Are there other scarecrows that you've noticed this year that you particularly admire to give our listeners a sense of what they're missing by not being here? Mona, have you seen one that really blew you away?
Yes, absolutely. I am quite shocked. This is my favorite scarecrow in town outside of a dress shop. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a beautiful dragon with this gorgeous, gorgeous colors. Vibrant colors just really inspire me, and I love this thing. I feel so bad you win a prize. I can take it home after this. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Bill, do you have a favorite one?
Well, your last guest, Alex, and did the genie, and that just blows me away when I see the genie coming out of the little lamp, and he kind of goes sideways and then blows up to this wonderful beast. You know, well, he's not really a beast, but he could.
Yeah. So, Taylor, you have scarecrows in motion, and you have the stationary scarecrows.
We do. And one of the girls that's new to scarecrow making, she did her first one last year. This year she created an E.T., and he's a giant E.T., and he's just amazing, looks exactly like him. You've got to see that one, Dave. It's in the West Village.
All right, we're going to take a tour tomorrow. Bill and Mona Shepherd, thanks so much for coming by this afternoon. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for making Scarecrow Festival so special. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to chat some more with Taylor. John Lynn joins us at 5:05. This is Newstalk 920 KVEC. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio.
BC.
Top of the hour is AP Radio News. Then the Lynns are going to be here. I'm Dave Congleton. We are at Lynn's in the beautiful East Village of Cambria. Why are we here? Well, we're going to enjoy some pie, but mainly we're here because we wanted to show our support for the great, 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 wonderful, one-of-a-kind Scarecrow Festival, 7th annual. You just heard from some of the artists. We're back with Taylor Hilden. Now, after we're done with the Lynns, Taylor, we're going to meet George Marshall, right?
That's right.
And what's he going to talk about?
I think George is going to talk about the nursery, Dave, and a lot of people that come to Cambria to enjoy the Scarecrow Festival, they overlook the nursery. And this year, George has about 30 different displays up there, whimsical, magical, like Alice in Wonderland, the whole tea party thing. And it's really very fun. He's also going to talk about the Christmas markets.
Which is a big deal.
It's a very, very big deal.
So we'll talk with George about that at 6:05. Again, the nursery, it's just kind of kitty corner from Cambria Pines Lodge.
Yes, it is. It's walking distance. You can spend the night at the lodge after having dinner at Lynn's and then walk over to the nursery and enjoy the scarecrows.
Another local institution, Charlotte and I have stayed at Cambria Pines Lodge several nights over the years. Always a nice time there. I know some friends, like in San Luis, for Christmas, they'll come up and spend a couple days at the Camber Pines Lodge. That's their getaway vacation.
And it's wonderful, especially this time of year, because starting the day after Thanksgiving, the Christmas markets will be open, I believe, from Thursday through Sunday.
Right. You wanted to mention the flash mob.
I did, Dave. I'm sorry that you're not going to be here to enjoy it. If you haven't had an opportunity, the flash mob is very exciting in Cambria, and it only happens during the Scarecrow Festival.
How does it work?
It's supposed to be secret, of course, but right. Just because I know you all, it'll be at the farmer's market on Friday.
All right, looks like we got a little connection problem with Dave back at the base. Let's play a little take five until we get him back. Yeah, everyone knows that song. Everyone loves that song. Who doesn't like Take Five? All right, let's get Dave back. Until then, enjoy some Dave Brubeck.
It is 5:06 on the Central Coast. Good afternoon. I'm Dave Congleton. I'm having a grand time. Why? Because I'm up in Cambria. I'm where you want to be. I am sitting here upstairs at Lynn's Restaurant in the beautiful East Village, Cambria. It has been crowded in Cambria today. Why? Because people are up here for the 7th Annual Scarecrow Festival. That's what brought us up here. And we're going to be here all the way till 7 o'clock as we continue to talk about all things Cambria. But we would be remiss if we didn't spend some time with our gracious hosts. As we hear Lynn's, it's only appropriate that we punch up the microphones and say good afternoon, welcome, and thank you to our host, John and Reen Lynn. Hey, Lynn's.
Hello.
Hey, a good night of applause.
And David, you're welcome. We're really happy to have KBEC here in our restaurant this afternoon, and really happy to have you talking about the wonderful Scarecrow Festival that's going on right now.
Isn't it pretty amazing out there, isn't it, Reenie, the Scarecrow Festival?
It's like summer all over again. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing inside any of the Lynn's stores, too. It's a little hard to keep up with, but fun.
Because it brings you business. It helps the local businesses.
Right, right. And it brings people in at a very beautiful time of the year for Cambria. The fall weather is incredible up here.
Do you think it was going to be a success, John? Did you know how long the Scarecrow Festival was going to work?
It's far beyond anything I ever imagined. Taylor Hilden and her friends who started it and got it rolling and, of course, are keeping it rolling have just done a stellar job. Yeah. Stellar.
Well, what's impressed by is how this is really a community-wide project.
It sure is.
Community gets involved in
everyone. Everyone.
Well, and, you know, it plays to an artsy community. When we first moved here, I took Rainey down to Laguna Beach near where I grew up, and I said, you know, this is the way Cambria is. It's the artsy community that Laguna used to be. Yeah. Laguna now is this great big megalopolis, but today, Cambria is a real artsy community, and so the Scarecrow Festival has played to that very well.
All right. So people should come up to the Scarecrow Festival. It runs to the end of the month. And while they're here, have a piece of pie.
A piece of pie?
A piece of pie.
Yeah.
And some comfort food.
A piece of pie. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know about because we're always talking about the pie, but here we are in this beautiful restaurant, very nice upscale restaurant. The menu is quite impressive. There's been a big evolution for the company, hasn't there been, John?
Yes. Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, when we first started this place, the restaurant, that is, it was a little, we just celebrated in July our 25th anniversary, and when we first started 25 years ago, it was more like an upscale coffee shop. 3 meals a day, but they were a different type of meal because we had a different kind of customer in those days. But now, in the intervening years, since the wine industry exploded and so much has happened in this county, it has changed, and our customer has kicked up a few notches, too. And so we had the fire that happened here in 06, and we reopened again in late 07. We had an opportunity then to raise the ante ourselves. And we were really taking a risk. We wondered if it was the right thing to do at the time. But in retrospect, hiring a talented executive chef and making the restaurant a nicer atmosphere were things that really needed to be done.
Did it work from the beginning, John?
Absolutely.
Mm. Someone please tell someone, don't put food so close to two guys on the radio.
Well, you can't do anything about it.
You can't eat on the radio.
No, no. It was actually brought for you.
Yeah, this is Chef Matt Beckett, and I
did
it.
Bill,
it's the end. Hey, Matt.
Hi, guys. Chef Matt Beckett here. I could not let Dave come to the restaurant without bringing him a little taste of some local swordfish. And we've got abalone from Cayucas, the Abalone Rose Farm. So we demonstrate that Loon's does a little more than just the comfort classics, but we do lots of fresh fish and obviously local product and lots of local produce.
Well, I'm happy for hearing you have the food so close to us. Go ahead and talk a little bit about the menu, Cash Lynn's.
You bet. Well, we have our classics. We've got our meatloaf and all of our wonderful pies. But you can expect dinner to see some fabulous. Every night, we've got a steak special, fresh seafood special. So if you're looking for that higher end, you've got a little bit of everything if you want to. And everything is fresh, local. We try and source, naturally source seafood. So you can enjoy your food and feel good about the environment while you're eating.
Can I interject
here? Sure, please, Rini.
I'm not a trained chef, but I know how to cook. And Matt has the training, and he's taken our restaurant to a new level. We work great together.
Yeah.
A lot of my dishes are still on the menu, the old-time favorites, and he has interjected a lot of youthful energy into our business.
But who decides? How do the three of you work together? Who decides the menu?
Well, I think I've got the creative aspect there, and they give me, you know, the ability to do what we want, but obviously the classics are always here, and we did improve a little bit, maybe a little touch on some of the classics.
We're often on the same page, we work really well together.
John, you're being quiet there.
Well,
he doesn't cook.
Nobody eats.
Yeah.
And so we brought a little appetizer out here. I know you guys can't see it or taste it, but we've got a hazelnut macadamian beurre blanc sauce with some abalone. And then we've got a local swordfish with a little lemon thyme beurre blanc and some pineapple, just little swordfish lollipops there. Alamora Bay, the local swordfish. I think Del Nino brought a lot of sword up. So that's on our menu for tonight.
We also want to talk, though, about the pies and the desserts, because every Friday we talk about this, we always hear about Rini's secret recipe.
What is it, the secret?
Well, no, I don't want to listen, but
I think it's just real ingredients. We don't put anything artificial in our products. It's just old-time, wholesome ingredients, and so I think that's what makes it good. Plus, we've perfected things on how to treat the fruit so it doesn't overcook and get to be a big soggy mass in our pies. We have some little secrets like that.
And not oversweetening.
And not oversweetening things so you can really taste the flavor of the food.
Is this the way it's been from the beginning?
Yes, it has. I haven't changed a thing.
Because every time I eat Lynn's, whether it's the menu or the pie, you taste the ingredients.
You do taste the ingredients. That's what people tell me. Yeah. You see the ingredients, too, because I do believe people eat with their eyes.
So, Matt, did they give you any instructions when they brought you on board about what they wanted?
Well, we wanted to just work with farm freshness, and I'm fortunate to have a farm. So we're one of the true farm-to-table restaurants in the county here. And they've been growing stuff at the farm that we're planning for the next year, you know, for our menus. So we're able to choose what we want and go seasonal and at the peak of its freshness.
Well, let's try this. You have any specials for tonight?
Yeah, well, tonight, like I said, we have the local Morro Bay swordfish, and we're doing a pineapple relish salsa with that, and we've got a sake syrup, and we have a shishito pepper from Lynn's Farm, which is kind of a rare pepper to find. Not a spicy pepper. It's an Asian pepper, and just has a real depth of flavor.
Man, we're not in Kansas anymore.
We're really fortunate, too, because to extend that argument of the idea of the farm-to-table thing that we have always done, but in addition, we're very fortunate because we have a lot of neighbors who live close to us that grow complementary things to us, and so we're able to bring some of their things to our table, too.
That's really important, Matt, the whole farm-to-table idea, isn't it?
Yeah, as John just touched, that Santa Rosa Creek there where all the farms are out here at the end of Cambria here, just their neighbors, the season, you know, produce, everything that comes in during summer and even wintertime, the squashes right now. You know, we won 4 years in a row for the Super Preparation, a nice local
fundraiser for the wildlife, which I'm a good fan of wildlife.
I was one of the judges 2-3 years ago. I remember you.
Yes, you were.
Yeah. I remember this very well. Well, let's take a break. We are here with John and Weenie Lynn. Matthew is also here. Matthew, last name?
Matthew Beckett.
There is. We're talking about all the things happening in Lynn's, all the things happening in Cambria in light of the Scarecrow Festival. I'm Dave Congleton. This is News Talk 920 KVEC. 519 on the Central Coast. Welcome back. I'm Dave Congleton. Just as a reminder, Congressman Lowe's Caps will be with us tomorrow, talking about everything happening or not happening. Oh, my God. He just put pumpkin pie in front of me. Holy. What was I saying? Oh, Lois, somebody's going to be on the show tomorrow. Oh, Lord. John and Weenie Lynn are here. We've got Matthew Beckett here. We're broadcasting live from Lynn's of Cambria, part of the Scarecrow Festival. Come on up and see the scarecrows. Have some Lynn's pie. Weenie, what am I being served here?
You are being served a slice of Lynn's pumpkin pie.
Oh, wait a minute.
Pie of the month.
I see two forks.
Two forks usually.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll remove that one fork.
Okay. I was supposed to share this with somebody.
No, you're not sharing. And this is one of Lynn's recipes. It's probably one of the most traditional because pumpkin pie is pumpkin pie. It's people rave about it and say it's wonderful, and it is.
It's wonderful.
But it's...
I love pumpkin pie.
I have to say this is probably the only pie recipe I haven't created myself. All the rest
really?
Of them I have.
Tell the story.
Really? On the pumpkin pie?
Well, yeah, we created it.
On the ones I've created? I just experimented until this... is just kind of a traditional recipe that's been around for a long time. That's what I mean.
Okay.
The other recipes I've worked with and tweaked them and done my own thing. But this one, you can't mess with something that's real good in the first place.
Yeah, but I've had bad pumpkin pie. I've had dry
really?
Pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Or they too cook dry.
It, but they cook it too.
Would you like some?
I've got some right here.
Okay.
You know, that
is my time?
Because you can ruin
it. I can't hear him. Try. I'm sorry. It's a live remote, folks. Work with it.
I was just going to say that you're right about, you know, you could have a bad pumpkin pie and so on. Every year, I'm one of the judges for the Idlers apple pie contest. And it floors me every year that out of all those pies, all of them, each and every one of them is different from the others. And it's some of the most amazing things that people try. I mean, I've tasted things in those pies, and I think, what on earth was this?
Yeah, but they're apple pies, and every apple is different. So that's one of the most challenging ones to develop.
But, Rini, humor me with the question.
Okay.
Why pie?
Why pie?
Yeah, I mean...
I'm a Midwestern girl.
Well, but couldn't you have gone with cake? Couldn't you have gone with ice cream? Why the focus on pie? How'd that come to be?
I never liked birthday cake. I always ask for pie. My birthday is in the middle of the summer, and I always wanted cherry pie. So, well, really, why pie is because we had to develop something to do with our berries when we grew them and had no market close by. So, why not pie? Of course it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's another thing, too. When we first moved here almost 40 years ago, 38 years ago, a lot of the community was much smaller then, and it was much more tightly knit. I mean, it's still very tightly knit, but it was even more that way. And we went to a lot of dinners where everybody brought one element of the dinner. And it was before very long. It wasn't very long. And when we walked in the door, people would turn around and look to see if Rennie Lynn had pies with her. And we weren't in the pie business.
That was before I really made it.
Make sure we invite the Lynns.
Yeah.
We don't care who else is coming. Make sure we invite the Lynns.
Wow. If you want dessert.
So then, Matthew, how did you hook up with the Lynns? How'd that come to be?
Oh, well, networking, chef networking, and I was out the San Luis Country Club for a while, and someone had mentioned that Lynn's was looking for an executive chef, and met up with John and Rini, and after meeting with them, I realized what wonderful people they are, and what an amazing operation they've done, and just as a chef, it's inspiring to see where they've come from and what they've done with this place, so I just wanted to continue.
What do you learn from them? About the biz.
Well, I've learned that they're hard workers, and that hard work pays off, you know.
Persistence
pays off.
Yeah.
And to stick with things that work, you know. They know what people like in Cambria and in this area, and I think a lot of it revolves around what comes out of that, you know, a farm and out of Santa Rosa Creek.
That's an interesting point. The taste of the people of the North Coast.
Mm-hmm. And we all fit together well, too. When Matt first sat down with us, it was as if we were cut from the same cloth. And we could see that there was an appreciation on his part in what we had already done, the kinds of recipes that Rini was already known for. And he didn't seek to supplant that. He was looking at ways in which he could add to it and help it along.
One of my first cooking experiences with Matt was making some soup for a wedding, and I had put it together, and he goes, "But I think it needs just," or I said, "I think it needs just a little of blah, blah, blah." And he goes, "That's exactly what I was going to do." And so we just kind of clicked.
Wow. But now out back, one of the big changes is you have, like, the Lynn's compound there. I mean, it's not just here. You've got Easy as Pie.
That was making lemonade again. That was, you know, that occurred when we had our disastrous fire in 2006. That complex had been built and just sitting there vacant. No one wanted to rent it. They were afraid people wouldn't come around the corner and go up Bridge Street. And so behind John Lynn's back, my son and I, Aaron Lynn, called the landlords and said, "Just how much would this be, and would you consider us as tenants?" And it was reasonable. They turned out to be the best landlords we've ever had. And we jumped into that and opened a cafe and two retail stores in less than 6 months after the fire. And so then when we rebuilt here in the restaurant, it made sense to keep them because it really is working and people love what we've done up there. And it kind of took the heat off the retail end down here at the restaurant, allowed us to have more room here in the restaurant. Therefore, wonderful chefs like Matt Beckett.
But the food is not enough. There's got to be that combination of good food and great service, but also good business sense.
Exactly.
Well, and that was a difficulty when we opened the cafe. Part of the difficulty there, when we reopened the restaurant after rebuilding after the fire, we had to figure out a way in which one didn't cannibalize the other, that they could symbiotically live together, and we had to figure out a way of distinguishing one from the other so that they would do that.
What do you think, Matt? They did it.
They did, and as Rini said, making, you know, lemonade out of lemons, they really... One thing after another just kept leading to where we're at now.
So what are the new challenges? What's new at Lynn's? What would you point to?
Challenges? Mr. Lynn's
keeping up with our business.
Keeping up with our business. Good, Matt. Yeah, it has been a real challenge for the month of October, just keeping up with it.
Yeah,
that's
October,
a good point.
October used to be a little bit of a quieter, you know, month. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we've spent a lot of effort toward since we sold our restaurant in San Luis and became just a Cambria operation again, the other thing that we've concentrated on has been our wholesale business.
And that's TrueBin.com.
Well, and the wholesale to like other companies that resell our products. Like
local store.
The Knott's Berry Farm relationship
right.
has turned out to be very good.
How's that going, John?
Excellent. In fact, I got an email from the fellow who is in charge of retail for the park, Knott's Berry Farm, and he told me that he hasn't seen a down day yet. It just keeps going up and up and up. They're very pleased with the sales.
Well, you better be careful. You may have more people from Southern California coming up to experience Lynn's.
That would be heartbreaking.
They come.
We already do. We will be doing a wedding for the head of Knott's Berry Farm's daughter.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Son and daughter-in-law. That's right. Yeah.
I was just going to say something about the customers. We have the same customers, even though we don't see them except maybe once a year or twice a year, but they come, and when they come to Cambria, they always come visit all our stores, which is great.
Well, when I think of Cambria, this is the restaurant I think of. I've lived down in the Pomo, of course, there it's Jocko's. Jocko's.
Boy, absolutely.
But in Cambria, it's Lynn's. You guys have really branded yourself, in my mind, as the restaurant of this community.
Aaron,
where people come.
Aaron says that people call Cambria Lynn's. They tell him that.
Now, Rena, you have to take off running errand, but you may come back.
I have to take my Cub Scout up to his meeting up on the hill.
All right. Do they have to bring pie?
No, not tonight.
John Lynn's going to stick around. Matthew Beckett's going to stick around. I'm Dave Congleton. We're eating pie and having fun and talking restaurants. Stick around. Welcome back. I'm Dave Congleton. This is a special edition of Hometown Radio. Why is it special? Well, I just had a piece of pumpkin pie. That's your house. Actually, we're broadcasting live from our friends at Lynn's Restaurant in beautiful East Village of Cambria. We're up here to help celebrate the 7th Annual Scarecrow Festival. And, of course, to eat some pie and visit with our friends and have some great food. We're joined once again by John and Rene Lynn and Matthew Beckett as well. Please come up to see the Scarecrow Festival. It's up all the way through the end of the month. And by all means, visit the restaurant. What are the hours of Lynn's, by the way?
8 to 10, at least 10.
That's on the weekends. And we're one of the few restaurants that stays open in Cambria. The town generally shuts down fairly early, and we stay busy until closed.
So that's 7 days, Matthew?
9:30 during the week for winter hours.
No, but seven days
a week.
Are you open? You open 7 days a week?
Oh, yes.
So you're not one of these places, like a certain restaurant in South County that I won't mention. You walk in at 9 o'clock and they go, we're closed.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh.
I haven't been there in 6 years.
That's a cardinal sin with us.
I walked in 9 o'clock and the waitress came to feed us. And the guy behind the bar goes, we're closed.
Oh, okay.
We don't want you, is what they're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Over the whole.
Yeah.
If anything, we're overly accommodating at Lynn's, so, yeah, we are open.
Did I miss my calling as owning a restaurant a good gig?
It's kind of an up-and-down gig, I guess.
The ups, really?
The ups? Oh, gosh. It's fun. It's fun seeing the people. People are in a really good mood when they eat. I just have to compare to John's business before we came here. He fixed cars, broken cars. No one's happy when their car's broken.
Foreign car repair?
Oh, my God.
Not so fun.
And so this business is really fun compared to that. But the other up is, to me, is that we employ 100 people in this tiny little burg, and that inspires me to keep going because I see people getting a good income from their jobs here. Most of our employees, I see a smile on their face, and we have a great morale, I think. And so that makes it
worth it. And we've had a lot of people who've worked for us for many, many years. We have one lady that's been with us for over 30 years. We've got
she gets free pie.
We don't refuse Marianne anything. Everybody calls her Tia. That means aunt in Spanish.
Great.
What are the ups and downs for you, John?
Well, you know, a lot of people ask us about the restaurant business when they're thinking of going into the restaurant business. And the one thing I would say is a cautionary point, and that is it's got a high failure rate for a lot of different reasons. It's not an easy business to be a success in. It takes a lot of persistence. There are a lot of factors involved in it, and it takes unending hospitality and desire to make people happy and energy.
You always have to be smiling even when you don't want to. So I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that job.
Yeah, it is tough.
We just go hide out when we don't want to smile. That's not real often.
But we're lucky because we have in our son, Aaron, who's our general manager, we have someone who is always on it. He is just into this business, and of our three children, he was the one who always said, this will be my business. This is what I want to do.
And did you encourage him to do it, or did he find it on his own?
Well, we always told our kids, you will not have to do this. If you don't want to do it, you can go down the road and you can find another career. Certainly, this is not going to be an easy one if this is what you want to do. But we certainly welcomed him because we could see his energy level.
I just think about it because, not to go off topic, but in downtown San Luis, for example, it's all restaurants. It's just like one big restaurant.
Right.
And I stop and think, how many of those can actually survive?
It is, I think, a very difficult equation, and I think you bring up a very good point. Of course, we had a restaurant in San Luis, and we would...
They're going to come back, John. They want you to come back.
Yep, that's all I hear from people in San Luis. Sorry.
We do hear it, yes. you haven't seen us in that direction either. You're not apt to either.
Matthew, what's the ups and downs of being in the restaurant business?
Oh, gosh. Well,
obviously the family camaraderie, I think, is one of the big ups. It's hard work, but it's extremely rewarding when you're finished, the ultimate finished product, the creativity side of it. And people come in moody, hungry. The staff, but you're able to, turn these customers' energy around and their attitudes around.
So is it like that movie, the chef movie?
It's a lot like those movies a little bit. It is, It's high volume.
Matthew, they call you chef. Hey, chef.
I get a lot of chef, yeah.
You call me chef.
Low blood sugar is a tough aspect of it. When people come in and they're hungry,
but they
especially if they have little children. And when I used to work the counter myself, I would recognize that. I'd see their kids buzzing around, and I'd give them breadsticks or something to tide them over until they sat down and had a meal.
Is there such a thing as a typical day for the two of you?
That's what I like. I don't like things always the same.
Right.
It's always different. And
so what did you do? What was your day like today?
Oh, today. Let's see. What did I do today? I had to clean up some catering details for a couple parties we have this week, make sure everything was going to happen. And then I went over to one of my stores and moved some merchandise around and moved it out. And that's kind of what I do, went and picked up kids.
Yeah. John, what did you do today?
I took my son over to Fresno to pick up a new truck for him and came back and paid some bills in the office and then came over here.
Why? Over there and back in Fresno?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, all right.
Well, you don't want to stay in Fresno, do you?
That's not nice.
Well, all the Fresno people are now getting up out of the restaurant.
No, they're staying here.
They just checked into their motel.
Put a plug in for the catering business.
For the catering business? Oh.
We cater.
We do cater, but... Boy, that's kind of a tail that is wagging the dog right now. For some reason, we had a lot of parties scheduled for October, smack dab in the middle of the Scarecrow Festival. But we do a fantastic job. Matt's background was in catering and big banquets when he worked at the country club. And he's a pro. And I love working with someone who gets all the details. And
he never misses it. He does a big party. It's beautiful.
And every job is just a little bit different depending on where it's at. And that's the challenge for me, to have it organized. And I do like to organize things. So,
Matthew, anything you want to say about the catering part?
Oh, I just like to say that we do a lot of catering. And like Rini said, we've been booked in October. We customize catering, weddings and parties and anniversaries and all that kind of stuff.
Memorials.
And we're pretty much booked for the year, looked into it, and we could probably squeeze you in. But we've been really busy. Catering has picked up tremendously.
All right, we are broadcasting live from Lynn's up in Cambria, the beautiful East Village. We've come up here to check out the Scarecrows. You should, too. 7th Annual Scarecrow Festival is underway. We have John and Rini Lynn here. Matthew Beckett, head chef, is also here. And we'll come back and chat some more. You're listening to News Talk 920 KVEC. Top of the hour, it's AP Radio News. Welcome back to Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Congleton, and I am up here in Cambria. We don't get up here enough. And to make it even more special, we're surrounded by scarecrows. To make it even more special, we're up here on the second floor of Lynn's Restaurant in the East Village of Cambria, just chowing down, having some great food, and enjoying ourselves. We continue with John and Rini Lynn. Let's bring Aaron Lynn into the conversation, where he wears the hat of being a general manager. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
How are you, Dave? I'm well.
All right. Come on, let's get you a different career. Come on, walk away. I'll get you a job on the radio. Come on.
He's got the voice.
He can just about the
voice. Yeah, he got the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? And is there pressure because you're a Lynn from people? You have to follow in their footsteps?
I've never felt
it
as being an opportunity in front of me, whether it's our farm dictating the pace or the restaurant's hours. Being open 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily, 7 days a week, all days, but Christmas every year, the sheer challenge just drives us, and there's not really much choice.
But what about these popularity contests?
Popularity contests.
Favorite restaurant in North County, favorite date night place, those kind of things.
I think we scored better back in the days. We had a restaurant in San Luis as well as Cambria. I think we had a little more support for stuffing ballot boxes at that point.
I think it makes you a great supervisor.
Whoa. Politician, at least.
Well, he's calling a spade a spade.
Well, but the proof is in the food, and the proof is in word of mouth.
Yeah.
Whether it's on Facebook or something else. You know, people come, they have a good meal, they tell the world. That, to me, is what matters. And the fact that you're still open after all this time, doing great things, that speaks volumes.
We opened when I was 14. I'm the inverse of that today, 41. Not that today's my birthday, but we've come a long way in those 26 and a half years.
What's the typical day like for you, Aaron?
Wake up early, take 5 children to school. My nephews and my 3 children go to school. I then come straight to the restaurant to help my bistro person fight off the coffee rush. We offer a $1 coffee, great slow roasted coffee. And people come and feel free, therefore, to grab a pastry or one of our great breakfast burritos offered to locals at a special rate.
Did you ever make a mistake?
Very often.
As a general manager, did you ever decide to do something like, oh, damn, why did I do that?
Sometimes I just put my foot in my mouth when I speak too soon.
Yeah.
When the intensity, when I feel very intensely about doing things correctly.
Right.
Thus, when I see somebody coming at work unprepared or in a lazy fashion, it gripes me.
Stress service, because whenever I've been here, the service has always been impeccable. That's got to come from the general manager. Down.
And I really thank you for that compliment. I've got a reputation to uphold, and given the economy, that gets harder and harder to accomplish.
All right. So, but go back. How do you stress service? What do you say to your servers?
I think it's more the standard I set forth in working side by side instead of being a general manager that sits on his tush upstairs behind a desk.
Sound like your dad?
Maybe, but I have dad doing that at that end of the job, which allows me and really her kids.
His dad does not exactly sit on a tush. I call him the doodad run because he's always on the run.
Well, he was clearly implying somebody, you know.
He's the one that started the farm. He's the one that built the fence around the 23 acres, built the house that I'm raising my 3 children in. Thank you, Lord. And thank you to both of my parents, honestly. So he has no lack of energy, and perhaps that's one place I get all the energy I do have.
Well, let's hear more about the farm-to-table, because you actually have a farm, right, Aaron?
So Tuesdays and Thursdays, after dropping the children off, I will go meet with the wonderful Cindy Lee Bidwell, who consults with me and helps me plant the seeds literally. I then translate to a couple of hurricane-oriented employees to get the plants in the ground, harvest the seeds, weed the patches. We have row crops as well as those trees that Mom and Dad planted originally when we moved to the farm so long ago. So where many people wish they could have a farm backing up their own family restaurant, our family farm backs our restaurant daily. We also have a 1,000 square foot greenhouse in which we grow a variety of things. Heirloom tomatoes is one of the big things that we grow, but basil, all kinds of things are grown in that greenhouse. So we've got the outdoor things, avocados, oranges, lemons, limes, things of that kind on tree fruits, but in addition, the vegetables and so on.
Matthew?
Yeah, when you're coming to Lynn's, you're getting a true taste of Cambria. You're eating out of the dirt of Cambria, out of Santa Rosa Creek Farm. It's a good thing.
What about the impact of social media on a restaurant, other than Facebook and websites and things like that, Twitter? Does that make an impact for you?
I believe the branding that our marketing agent as well as Mom has done over the years has certainly set the standard for that, yes.
You agree with that, Rini? The social media, does it make a difference?
Social media is there. I just think it has its place, and it has helped our business grow. But I just think our association with just being here in Cambria has really made the difference for our restaurant. People love to come to this town. They love to come to this town.
And we've built a trust with so many people who come back again and again and again. Ultimately, when you talk about the success of a restaurant, the real success isn't how many votes they get in New Times or something of that kind. I don't mean to disparage them, but the point is, the real test of a restaurant is how full it is.
Yeah.
Andrew, let's drop our idea for best, you know, best of restaurant. Cool. I don't think anybody wants to do it.
You're going to get in trouble if you do it.
Aaron, thanks for coming. I know you have to go coach a game. You're coaching one now. Final thoughts about the restaurant?
I just really see proof in the pudding with how often my customers come back to Lynn's. I'm amazed at the following we have, the loyalty. People say they try someplace else in town, and they just say, why would we do that? They come back, and they'll eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner 3, 4, 5 days in a row at Lynn's.
Matthew, quick final thought?
Oh, and I'm just thinking about how this area is supposed to be one of the happiest places to live, and it's no wonder with all the fresh produce, the wineries, the coast. It's just unbelievable.
Fresh air.
And the fresh air and the wildlife and nature. I'm so fortunate.
Final thoughts?
Final thoughts is I'm 67 years old, and I'm going to keep on working for a while.
Fantastic.
I can't imagine that. Thank you.
Thanks for announcing your age on the radio. Wow. All right.
Okay, I don't mind.
John, final thought? I'm 103, but I'm still working, too. No, I'm 68, and I'm very happy with my life, and my wife and my and Aaron and our daughter, even from New York, still makes suggestions to us regularly. We're very happy to be doing what we're doing.
And we're so happy that you invited us to come up. We're delighted to be here. Thanks for being such gracious hosts. We're off to the news. We'll come back for the 6 o'clock hour. This is Hometown Radio. I'm Tim.
Thank you.
It is 6:07 on the Central Coast. As we say good evening and welcome back to a special edition of Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Congleton. It is Monday, October 19th, 2015. We continue our special live broadcast from Lynn's Restaurant in the beautiful East Village of Cambria. We've had a wonderful afternoon up here visiting with all sorts of people in Cambria. Why are we here? Because it is Scarecrow Festival. Thanks again to the Lynn's for joining us during the 5 o'clock hour and being such gracious hosts. Let's go back to our friend Taylor Hilden, who is taking time away from organizing this year's festival. Taylor, it continues to go well.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you for having me on your show.
Sure. Now, introduce George for us, please.
It is a great pleasure to introduce you to George Marshall, who has done such an amazing transformation for a lot of the things that go on at the nursery here in Cambria. It isn't just a nursery, Dave. It's a destination now. When you walk through the nursery in October, it becomes a magical experience. There are scarecrows all over the place, and most of them are new this year, I do believe. I recall there's an Alice in Wonderland scarecrow display with the whole tea party, which is it's just spectacular. Set in a beautiful setting, lots of little footbridges and walkways. George has created such a magical place.
But as we meet George, there's something in your hair, Taylor.
This is to make you smile, Dave.
What is that in your hair?
It is a little hat. That's what I brought you for Charlotte.
Oh, but
it's a this festival season hat. It's a spider.
Okay. All right. Why not? George, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
And Taylor, thank you for that wonderful introduction. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. And, yes, our nursery this year, we created 22 new scarecrows, all kind of with magical themes, as was the theme of the scarecrow.
And you're Kitty Corner from Cambria Pine Box.
Yes, that's our part of our company.
All right. Okay.
And I have a great staff, and they really went to work about 6 months ago, and we started coming up with these different scarecrows and really enjoyed putting it all together and getting it put out there, and it's been a lot of fun.
How long have you lived in Cambria?
I've lived here 13 years, but my family over 60 years.
And why do you stay? What is it about this place? Help me understand.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's the theme of the festival this year is magical, but my grandmother, who lived here since 1956 and lived to be almost 100, she always said that Cambria was magical. And once I finally came out here to actually live, because I grew up in Minnesota, I really discovered it. You know, you just, every day you can walk on the beach or you can go up into the forest and just great people, and there's so much to do. I absolutely love living here.
Well, I guess you've been here 13 years.
Yes, and then, and I got a very nice job with the Cambria Nursery, and Moonstone Hotels is the name of our captainship or mothership or whatever, and we have we've had up to 13 or 14 different hotels, and I worked for them for over 10, and then I moved over to the nursery the last three.
As I tell all these other guests, George, I showed up about 2:30, came down Burton Drive, swung into the Village. I couldn't believe how crowded it was for a Monday afternoon in October.
Yeah, it is incredible what these scarecrows have done to bring people to the community. You know, we're up on the hill and we're kind of hidden away up on Burton and Drive and Eaton at the nursery. But because we have these scarecrows and they're mapped out, and people flock, you know, and they come in. And this weekend was just absolutely phenomenally busy. And then today, too, I couldn't, you know, practically all day the registers were ringing.
Well, as I've been talking with Taylor over the years, what strikes me and why I love this event so much, George, there's nothing else on the Central Coast like the Scarecrow Festival. Any, they're like, yeah, we got a concert here, you got a wine tasting. All right, great, all good, noble thing. But when you say scarecrows, Cambria.
Absolutely, that's what it's become, and more people every time they come in to see us at our businesses, that's what they're here for, and they're thrilled that we're doing it because it gives them something different to do.
Right.
And go around town, take photos, and just have a good old time.
But obviously this is also good for local businesses.
Absolutely, our businesses are, I can't think of anyone that isn't pleased in the business community to see that those scarecrows are here. And I've taken a month of October, which was an okay month, but now it's genuinely one of the better of the year.
It's as if you've extended the summer.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What did you think when you first heard, oh, we're going to do some scarecrows?
Well, at first I thought, nice. Oh, that's a lot of work. I gotta make something or come up with something, you know, and when it first started, I was running the hotels, one of them out on Moonstone Beach, and we didn't do that much the first year, but then we saw other people, and it's, you know, putting them out, and they're clever ideas, and so we really, you know, thought, well, you have got to participate in that. That is something that's going to bring more and more people, and it's just grown by leaps and bounds every year.
But fess up, George, have you yourself made a scarecrow?
Well, I have to say no, other than putting a wig on one or, you know, boots or something like that. I depend heavily on a great creative staff.
Yeah. But isn't it amazing how the whole, by and large, the community has embraced this event, not just supporting it, but participating in it.
Absolutely. The business community and a lot of the locals, too, are very happy to see it be here and bring, you know, fun to the town. And that's what it's all about.
George Marshall on this broadcast. A big event coming up in December.
Yes, we have the Cambria Christmas Market coming up, a 21-day event this year.
21 days.
21 days.
21 days of whatever.
Yeah. Well, it starts the day after Thanksgiving every year. And every evening it's from 5 to 9. It's held at the Cambria Pines Lodge. But it's over 1 million lights between the Cambria Pines Lodge and the Cambria Nursery.
Stop.
Yeah.
Did you just say over 1 million lights?
Over 1 million Christmas lights, yes.
Wow.
It's absolutely phenomenal. Wow. I'll give you a little history.
Sure.
We started about, my boss, the owner of the company, started talking about 5 years ago, you know, of like doing a Cambria Christmas market, you know, enjoy going to the European markets in Germany, Austria, where a lot of the towns put together in their squares vendors that sell their goods, handmade goods, and they have food and a drink called Glühwein, especially in Germany,
Glühwein,
which is a red-spiced wine, mulled wine, and it's just a great time in those countries. And he had been to those several times in Europe and thought, wouldn't that be a great thing to do here in Cambria? And especially during December, which prior from Thanksgiving to Christmas, one of our slower periods in our community. Everybody's Christmas shopping somewhere else. Our hotels are slow. And we thought, this would be a great thing to bring people here. But we thought, okay, they don't know much about, you know, German Christmas markets or European Christmas markets, but what do Americans understand? Christmas lights. And so we started dreaming up, you know, ideas of how we could, you know, decorate and put all these lights up in different areas all over the acreages at the lodge and, you know, attract people to come. And on top of that, we have every year had anywhere from 18 to 25 individual vendors that we build them these booths that look, they're green and red with red and white striped tarps on top, and they're done in the traditional German style. And out of these booths, these people sell their handmade goods and different things like, I'll go over the vendors and stuff, what they do later, but it's, so that's one of the attractions to bring them in, and then they go all over our pathways and see, we've had a Grinch display for several years, a nativity scene that's outstanding, and our big is our big, huge 90-foot tunnel of lights.
A tunnel of lights.
Yeah, it's kind of the grand, you know, entry to all the different lights that we have. It's multicolored, and you walk through. It's a big picture-taking opportunity. It's kind of our signature of this is where it all begins.
It's as if, George, you do in December what the scarecrows do in October for tourism.
Exactly. And because we want not just the Cambria Pines Lodge to be filled up. We want all the hotels in town to be filled up. And, yes, the people come up to this event from 5 to 9 in the evening, but they shop in the town during the day.
Or stay overnight.
Yeah, and stay overnight. It helps everybody. It brings in...
So the neighbors are okay with, oh, there are the lights again.
Well, I don't think the lights bother them, but we're doing a lot of things to really help this year with doing more and more to control the traffic, because it gets smashed busy up on Burton Drive.
So you should just get a room at the Cambria Pines Lodge and walk over.
Yeah, well, and you can. It's right there on ground stuff. But we have a really great system coming up this year for helping transport everybody to and from the market.
Is there a website for all this work?
Yeah, CambriaChristmasMarket.com.
CambriaChristmasMarket.com.
Right.
This is amazing.
It has all kinds of the information.
PG&E, your PG&E bill must be huge in December.
Well, thank God for LED. And then also, you know, as you walk the pathways and stuff, you come to the end of what's at the lodge. But then our nursery is also open the same hours, and we do, in addition, a ton of lights and displays over there. So people, it's very magical over there also.
All right, George Marshall on Hometown Radio as we continue our coverage of the Cambria Scarecrow Festival, broadcasting live from Lynn's Restaurant in beautiful East Village of Cambria. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. Good evening. It is 6:22 on News Talk 920 KVEC. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. Tomorrow we'll be back in studio. Congresswoman Lois Capps is going to check in. Also, we'll talk about Shakespeare at Dinosaur Caves Park. On Wednesday, live music from Billy Fapiano. On Friday, Dr. Gary Forsman is in the studio. We're here weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on News Talk 920 KVEC, except for right here, right now, I'm up in Cambria. We're at Lynn's Restaurant in East Village, great restaurant in a great town, having a great time. Why? Because it's the 7th annual Scarecrow Festival, runs throughout the month of October. Come on up to Cambria. Don't wait till the end of the month, because John Lindsay says there's going to be a huge rainstorm, so come early, and while you're up here, come by Lynn's, get something to eat. Walk on the beach, have a great time, and go by the nursery. We're back with George Marshall. All sorts of things happening in Cambria, but we're inviting people to go to the nursery anytime. What are the hours, by the way?
Our nursery's open daily from 9 to 5.
What kind of stuff do you have at the nursery, George?
Well, as Taylor said before, we're not just a nursery. Of course, we have all kinds of assorted plants, natives, drought tolerant, especially in this tough time right now we're having with the drought. But we have two gigantic, over 5,000 square foot of gift shops. And we have all kinds of home decor. We have antiques. We have year-round Christmas. And
you're saying when it's time for holiday shopping, I should come to Cambria?
Oh, absolutely.
And visit the Cambria Nursery?
You will not believe our Cambria Nursery Christmas shop when you walk in the door of that building. I have a wonderful floral designer, Kevin Ray, and a gift shop manager, Lacey Winter, who do an absolutely phenomenal job of decorating and bringing in product that is so outstanding. And one of the neat features that we added this year is we have vintage Christmas, real vintage Christmas, things from the 1800s, and it is incredible product. Oh, some of our Santa Clauses.
A Christmas card from Ulysses S. Grant.
Yes.
Surrender to me at Christmas time.
We have feathered trees to look at. We have Santa Clauses that are lined up that are in perfect condition. All kinds of, from every different era, from the late 1800s all the way up to the 60s.
Right. And you know, I keep mentioning the Camber Pines Lodge because I've stayed there a couple times,
mm-hmm.
and it's a perfect place to stay for a getaway in Cambria, whether it's midweek, weekend, off-season, whatever. You're right there. You can walk into the East Village from the Cambria Pines Lodge.
Absolutely. It is a gem in the forest. It's 152 units, and we have a full-service restaurant, a full-service bar, a lounge with entertainment every night. There's dinner packages where you can book and get your room and your dinner.
Louis Ortega on Tuesday nights,
yes.
Usually.
Louis is there quite often. Other people like Jill Knight. She plays
there. Billy Fapiano.
Billy Fapiano plays frequently. So it is absolutely a fun place to go. And, you know, you can have a good time in the lounge and go back to your room. And we have some really great, you know, rooms. There's walking. The gardens at the nursery, 25 acres we have there, and the gardens are outstanding.
Well, that's one of the reasons I love Cambria so much, George, is that to me, it's the southern gateway to Big Sur.
Absolutely.
And even if you're just 45 minutes away in San Luis Obispo, it is a whole other world up here. It's not that expensive. You can get up here in less than an hour, and you can enjoy yourself doing all sorts of things like we've been discussing today.
Absolutely. Not only can you walk from the lodge downtown, you can also walk. There's pathways that bring you to the Cambria Nursery, and, you know, throughout the entire, you can walk in different places and come even up in the hills and the different pathways. It's Cambria Pines Lodge is very central to everything going on in the town.
Do you need any volunteers, any help to pull this big December event?
Yes. If you go to our website, CambriaChristmasMarket.com, there's applications there to, we need a lot of temporary help. And we've done this every year, and we always get a good amount of people that fill them out. And we really need 50 to 100 people yet to work this market.
And is that mostly at night?
Yes. It usually starts around 4:30, and they get done by 9:30.
And what is it that they're doing?
Well, some will be selling tickets. Some will be handling parking, directing traffic. Some will help work some booths. Other people might run registers. Things like that.
That's like a military operation.
It is. You really have to be well organized to get 24 vendors and make sure there's enough people, and then keeping the lights running during a rainstorm. I hope John Lindsay's right about that rain next week. But I hope he's right all winter.
It sounds like the memo should be, don't bother George Marshall during December. He's busy.
Well, I could still use vendors, so bother me now. Cause if
hey, what are you looking for in vendors, George?
Well, anybody with handmade things. Right now, I'd really like to get a glass blower of some sort, somebody who does leather goods, with some more handmade, you know, alpaca yarn type stuff. All that would be nice.
Mm-hmm. And they contact you through the website, sir?
They can contact you the website,
which is
CambriaChristmasMarket.com.
All right. And what are the dates for the Christmas market?
Okay, it starts on Friday, November 27th, and it goes the 28th and 29th for three nights. And then we're Monday, Tuesday, we're down, and then it runs for five nights. The second through the sixth, we're down Monday and Tuesday again, five more nights from the...
Because you're conserving power, right?
Yeah, or just to get some rest.
Yeah.
It goes from the 9th to the 13th again. Then we finish up on starting on the 16th and go eight straight nights up to the 23rd. Now, there is admission, and it varies from night to night. It goes, like a lot of Mondays and Tuesdays are $3, and then Saturday nights is up to $10.
Because you have to pay your electric bill.
Well, yes, somehow all of this stuff has to get paid for.
All right.
But we do have, you know, go to the website and you'll see information about how to buy tickets ahead of time, things like that.
All right, George, thanks so much for coming by. Again, the website for all the information about the big event in December is?
CambriaChristmasMarket.com.
And come on up and enjoy the scarecrows. What are the hours of your nursery?
My nursery is open daily from 9 to 5.
So come up and see the scarecrows. We're making those here. Come see the scarecrows, have a piece of pie or lunch at Lynn's, and then head on by the Cambria Nursery.
Absolutely. And Lynn's is one of our vendors at the Christmas market, so you can probably enjoy their pie while you're there.
Well, that's the kind of people there are. They support the community.
Absolutely.
Hi, George. Good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Come stay at the lodge, everyone.
Off we go to California Headline News. Let's find out what's happening around the state. Greg Hill has traffic. Scott Taylor has your Central Coast weather. I'm Dave Congleton. We'll be back with the town criers as we continue our live coverage from Cambria.
Thanks.
It is 6:37 on News Talk 920 KVUC. I'm Dave Congleton. It has been quite the afternoon here up in Cambria. We have really enjoyed visiting Cambria and seeing all the scarecrows and introducing you to some very special people in this very special town. As we wind down and begin our last segment, as we continue our live broadcast from Lynn's Restaurant up in the East Village of Cambria, come on by. You heard the Lynn's before, open 7 days a week, breakfast, lunch, dinner, pie, whatever you want, you can eat it here. Now, this is something completely different. In 24 years on the radio, I think this is the first time I've ever met town criers. Jerry and Bev Praber join me now. They live here in Cambria. And they're literally just off the plane where they went to a town crier competition in New Zealand. And apparently they did quite well. We'll hear about that in a second. Am I supposed to yell at you?
You can.
And you have your bells with you.
We do.
Go ahead. Give us a
ring, ding, ding.
Go ahead.
Oh, yay.
As the official town criers of the county of San Luis Obispo
and the village of Cambria,
we are often asked,
how do you pronounce the name of your town?
Is it Cambria
or Cambria?
We ask you, did King Arthur reign over Camelot?
No. Did the three wise men ride on camels? No.
Do you take pictures with your camera?
No. Am I wearing a cameo? No.
Would you eat camembert cheese?
No.
Maybe if I was hungry.
Or Campbell's soup? No.
Do you drive a Toyota Camry?
No. Therefore, we submit to you that the proper pronunciation of our hometown is Cambria, a quintessentially quaint community, no matter
how you say it.
May God bless America.
Wow. Holy cow. I'm done. I can't top that. Holy cow.
So that's the town crier? Is that what town crying did?
Oh, yeah, we read a proclamation that we've written, especially for the occasion. This happens to be one that she used in a early competition.
So is it the delivery or the context?
Well, it's both of those.
All right.
Plus, caring and poise. Yeah.
Accuracy is very important. You have to submit your cry in a competition in writing ahead of time. While you're reading it, somebody else is reading it. You make a mistake, you lose points.
We just made a mistake there. Actually, I did. There was a portion where Jerry was supposed to say, no matter how you say it, but I forgot because I've said this cry so many times that I just continued.
You've been married 55 years.
We have.
You've done this for 15 years.
Right. Yes.
How on earth does someone become a town crier?
Well,
who doesn't live in Massachusetts?
You have a friend who was originally from England who became a town crier and was the president of the American Guild of Town Criers, and he was supposed to recruit new people. And he influenced us.
He kept asking and asking. In fact, she would have been the first woman town crier in America if she'd said yes the first time. And we just kept resisting and resisting, and then we went to visit him, and he put a video of a town crier competition and left. And we came back. There we were.
Well, so what was it? I mean, was it costumes?
Oh, it's everything.
The whole thing.
You can imagine the kind of person it takes to be a town crier, and then imagine, I don't know, 50 of us together at one time. It's a great experience.
This is hard to imagine, I think.
Well, this is so different. You're it. And in California, there are how many town
criers? There's only one other one. And that's the
so we have two-thirds. So if this balcony collapsed right now, the town crier.
That's right.
Would be reduced by 66% in California.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of the ones in this country are concentrated in the east.
I would think so.
And the same thing is true in Canada. They're mostly in Ontario with a few in British Columbia.
And they're big in England.
Oh, very,
very big.
They're like the East Germans of town crying.
Yes. And when we went to a competition in England, we really got killed because they're really good criers.
So you just sold town cry. You compete.
Sometimes we compete. Otherwise, we read proclamations at weddings, at birthdays, at retirement parties. At
store openings.
So I can hire you.
You can.
To come.
Your show.
And we could
yeah.
come and bring.
We'd be fired.
We introduce you every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, become different. What's your website?
I have Jerry, BEVJERRY.com.
Repeat that again, please.
Bev Jerry, BEVJERRY.com.
So just Bev Jerry, no and. Just Bev Jerry.
It's Bev Jerry. It's all one word.
If you want something different for your meeting, your wedding, whatever, you can bring in a town crier.
You can contact us right there. Don't forget the www.
And we do a lot of just civic events, too. We dedicated to both of the new bridges at both ends of town, and we got to dedicate the new bathroom at Shamble Park.
Wow.
That was one of our very first things that we did, yes. We also have given cries at the supervisors' meeting when they induct the new supervisors and thank the outgoing people for their public service. And things like
that. And we point out, you know, it's radio, you wear costumes.
We don't usually call them costumes.
Oh, sorry.
We call them uniforms.
Or livery.
And here's the way they use the word livery.
Don't ring the bell again.
The reason is that when you put on a costume, you are pretending to be something. When you wear a uniform, you are something.
Fair enough. You are a town crier.
We are a town crier.
What's the history of town criers? Where does that come from?
As far as we know for sure, the earliest town criers were in 1066. You know what happened in 1066?
Hastings.
Adelaide.
William the Conqueror.
Very good. William the Conqueror,
yeah.
So
the only thing I know. So I think about 1066,
he stuck King Harold in the eye, or whatever he did, and conquered England.
And he had to let the people know that they'd been conquered.
So instead of putting it on his Facebook page or sending out a tweet, he hired a bunch of men to ride around England and go into a town and read a proclamation that says, guess what, you're all Normans. And then at the end of reading the proclamation, they would nail that proclamation to a post in front of some local building like a pub.
Right.
And that's why we post things on the internet, have the post office and the Denver Post and all those things.
Oh, post. That's where post comes from.
That's right.
So they posted the proclamation.
Right.
Yes.
All right. We got Jerry and Bev Craver on this broadcast. They are town criers. They are two-thirds of all town criers in the state of California. And you're just back from New Zealand where you kicked some serious crier butt.
We did well, and I was terrified when I saw the list of the criers that were coming. I know more than half of them, and they've done us in pretty badly in the past. We just had a good week.
So you took second?
I took second.
In the whole world?
Yeah.
Second in the whole world.
On the whole international competition, you are number two.
In this part of the galaxy.
So you have to try. You have to cry harder.
I have to cry harder.
So if you're over 60, you get that joke.
I am over 60.
We're number two, and try a little bit harder. That's a cry a little bit harder. Well, and how did they decide you're number two?
Well, the criteria for judging are things like your confidence in bearing the content of your cry,
your accuracy,
vocal proficiency. Are you nice and loud? Can they understand?
Yeah, yeah.
And we had to do three cries on three different topics that were assigned. They have to be between 100 and 125 words. If you miss that, you lose points.
Do you do this in front of an audience, Jerry?
Yes.
So there are people who actually come and sit through cries.
They do.
Really?
Yeah.
And they even applaud at the end.
Wow.
Well, that was part of this particular tournament. They insisted that you engage the audience. This is not always something that's judged, but this one was judged.
And I guess that's been pretty successful, too.
Yes, I have. In 2011, which was the last time they held a North American competition, I came in second in the North America. Thank you.
Did you compete with men or separate?
I was also the the best American crier in the competition. So I beat him then.
Women and men compete together, and in this competition, there were 5 women and 8 men, and that's the most percentage of women I've ever seen in a competition.
So I don't want to be around the two of you when you argue with each other.
That's right. You know.
They break out the bells and
we yell at each other.
And yell at
hit each other over the head.
Wow, I love this. All right, we're talking about Tom Cryer. Where in New Zealand were you?
South Island, Central Otago is the area that's sort of like our county would be.
Okay.
And that's where it was held, and we tried in 3 different cities. Towns, I guess you would say, in Cromwell and Alexandria. We were part of the Blossom Festival in Alexandria. It's the longest running festival in New Zealand. And then we were also crying in a little place called Roxborough.
Jared, what do you think of New Zealand?
I think it's a fabulous place. Not only is the scenery astounding, but people are extremely friendly and nice. We heard more horn blowing in 15 minutes at the L.A. airport than we did in the 4 weeks we were in New Zealand.
And that's with him driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, and I was causing all kinds of havoc. Yeah. Nobody blew their horns.
All right, we're talking with our town criers here. We have Bev and Jerry Praver. Let's take a break. We'll come back for a final segment. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. Top of the hour, it is AP Radio News, and then get ready for Meghan McCain and America Now. I'm Dave Congleton. For our final segment, broadcasting from Lynn's of Cambria up in the East Village. Come on by and say hi. Check out the Scarecrow Festival. It's here all through October. You will be blown away by the very talented members of this community and all that they have done to make this another successful year of scarecrows. We have been chatting with Jerry and Bev Praver. For Crying Out Loud is their motto. They are town criers. They live in Cambria. Their website is
Bev Jerry. It's all one word, BevJerry.com.
And the other thing unique about you is that you cry together.
As far as I know, there are only 2 other married couples in the world where both of them are town criers. And there's none other that cry together like we do. In fact, at this competition, we were asked to do a demonstration cry like we just did because even the other criers haven't heard it.
In competitions, we have to do it individually. We compete against each other. But that's the only time we do that.
Wow. Wow. I'm just blown away by this. Come back to Cambria, though. What made you come to Cambria?
Well, we lived in L.A.
Yeah. Okay.
When I quit my job as an engineer and we started doing folk music programs in schools throughout California, we could live almost anywhere because we didn't have to commute to work.
Right.
So we kept looking for places, and we had never heard of this place. A realtor in Morro Bay said, I have a listing in Cambria. And we said, where's that? And he sent us up here, and we fell in love.
And what happened? What was it about this place?
Oh, for me, it sounds very 70s, but it was the vibe. There are so many creative people in this community, so many artists and writers and musicians. Every house we looked at had at least one guitar in it, which impressed me. And that's really why I wanted to live here. It felt right.
Right. That's why the Scarecrow Festival does so well, because there's all these people making scarecrows.
Well, Jerry, talk about the Scarecrow Festival and why that's so special.
It's only been going on, well, I guess
7 years.
There you go. See?
7 years.
And it started from almost nothing, and now it's huge. And people really get into it big time. If you walk around town, you see them everywhere. And it's drawing people from all over the place, which is good news and bad news because we have a water shortage.
But yeah.
Good news for all the motel and restaurant owners.
Yeah, what would you say, Ben? What's so special about a Scarecrow Festival?
Oh, I think it's the fact that there's all this wonderful creativity out there that everybody gets to see. And I think it started really as a fun thing to do, not so much to attract tourists in, but just to do it because it was fun and creative.
So what's next for the town criers now that you're number 2 in international competition, Jerry? Well, do you aim to be number one? Can we help you get to be number one?
The next world competition will be in 2 years, and probably it's going to be in Eastern Canada. There's some question about whether it's going to be Ottawa or in
Halifax.
Halifax is in the lead right now, and we'll probably go, and maybe the guy from England won't show up, and I'll be number one.
Or maybe I will.
Actually, yeah, the, you have to understand that the judges are not, they're not experts. They're local officials, people like that. So on any given day, anything can happen.
Is this been passed on to young people?
No.
Well, they're trying to do that in some areas.
Right. But I'm trying to picture a young person, hey, I'm going to go be a town crier.
Well, we did, you know, one of the things we did as part of the competition is we went to 2 elementary schools,
yeah,
and we talked to the kids about it. And
any takers?
There was one young lady that I think definitely is going to be one. When
we've done that before. What are the skills you get out of this? What does it teach you to do?
Public speaking,
right, yeah.
How to protect your voice, because you are not amplified as we are right now. We're not on mics. It's totally.
So is the key to be loud, though?
Loud and
still
very clearly.
Yeah, still understandable.
All right. And you're available for any store opening, anything special.
Birthday party.
People want jazzed up by a town crier.
Exactly. We always say we bring color, tradition, and dignity.
And pageantry.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, just looking at your uniforms, this seems historically accurate.
Those are late colonial. By the way, there is a competition for best dressed crier, which we never win, but that we have to be able to talk about the clothes and why they look like the way they do.
BevJerry.com is the website. Thank you, yep. Jerry and Bev Fraber for coming by. Bev, final thoughts?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some more crying in Cambria next month.
One more ring of the bells, please.
Sure. Watch out.
Wow. Thank you, Catherine Ryan Hyde, and Ty Smith, and Taylor Hilden, and all the folks in the Scarecrow Festival, and John and Rennie, and Aaron Lynn, and Matthew Beckett. I've got to read my handwriting here. And George Marshall, and Bev and Jerry Prater. Special thanks to Andrew Cannon for making this happen. I'm Dave Congleton. Thanks for listening. Now, Una, Einer, Toby, Daisy, Jane, Lord Gus, and Big Gus, get off the couch. Get out the leashes. I'm coming home.
This is Jason Grody with Central Coast Lending. Give yourself the best possible chance to buy your dream home with our 21-day close. We get you fully pre-approved before you find your house so you can write a shorter, easier offer and beat out the competition. It's time for you to be the offer that gets accepted. Call Central Coast Lending today.
When you buy or refinance a home, just call 543-LOAN. Central Coast Lending.
Central Coast Lending is an equal housing opportunity real estate broker. California Bureau of Real Estate number 01839608. NMLS number 328358.
At CESLOC, you're more than a number. You're a member. CESLOC Federal Credit Union is headquartered on Broad Street, not Wall Street. Our members live and work here, and so do we.